welcome back to another episode of the TetraCast, RPG Site's weekly podcast. I'm your host, Brian Vitale. Joining me, we've got Mikhail Mednani.
Hello.
And Chao Min Wu.
How's it going?
And that's it. If you listen to this podcast weekly, you know that we kind of teed this up last week, that it's Summer Games Fest. We are recording this on Saturday morning. So to kind of give context for people listening in the future, the main stage show has appeared. That was last night. A few of the early presentations have been shown, but we haven't seen, and like Day of the Devs has occurred and a few of the other showcases, but not everything from Summer Game Fest, or at least this weekend, because we're recording this before like the Wholesome Direct, or I guess right after the Wholesome Direct. We haven't covered it yet. Xbox Showcase hasn't been done. So the news for this week is primarily going to be Summer Game Fest and a little bit of State of Play carryover from a couple days back. Adam, Josh, and James, as well as other people who contribute to the site, like Scott and Hayes, I believe, as well as Alex, of course, are all at Summer Game Fest. They're going to see demos. They're already, some of them are tweeting or blue skying about that. And it's just us to cover. So it'll be a little bit different of a flavor of podcast. We're going to try to cover what we can. And luckily, I'm kind of glad, actually, that we're not recording this after everything's been done, because we would never get out of here if it was Xbox and everyone else as well. And also, just as a little bit of programming note, I tried to match the quality as best I could, but it might sound a little bit different because typically my recording is the backup and Adam's recording is the primary. So it's just a different person recording, different setup. I'm in a different room. So if it sounds a little bit different, that is why. We did some test recordings, so hopefully it sounds okay. It'll be back to normal next week. So Mikhail, just to kind of ease the conversation in, like, what do you think of Summer Game Fest? At least like the main stage show that we saw yesterday.
So I wasn't planning on actually watching it live because it was 2:30 a.m. my time. And then there was Day of the Devs after that, which would have been like 4:30 a.m. onwards. But I decided to stay up and I volunteered to cover it, like, just randomly. So I was like, let me watch it live, because this would be the first time I watched a Jeff Keighley thing live in many years. Usually I catch up because his stuff is always like at an odd time for me. It was pretty good, I thought. Like, I wasn't bothered by most of it. Usually I just joke about half the trailers being a bathroom break or whatever, but this time it had a lot of stuff I liked. And I kind of liked the pacing as well, because it gave me enough time to post about it, because I think I did like 15 news stories for the thing. I don't remember how many I did. There have been like 2,000 stories in the last 2 weeks or the last week or whatever. But I thought it was pretty good. I knew some of the stuff which was going to happen through like quote-unquote leaks or like hints and stuff, but I still thought like I was pretty satisfied with everything. And yeah, I was okay with it. What about you?
I thought it was really good. And well, not really good. I thought it was just good. Just regular good. Like, I don't tend to watch like the Game Awards or Summer Game Fest. I just don't like the presentation style. But I watched this one. I was like, me and my fiance were doing like a big house clean, and then I had a little two-hour break that kind of lined up with Summer Game Fest. So I'm like, all right, I might as well just sit down and relax and watch this. And I don't know. I thought it was pretty good. I thought it had good, decent pacing. I thought it hit a couple things that were expected and a couple things that were surprises. And for our site, it felt like a good mix of, okay, this is really relevant to us, this is tangentially relevant to us, or this really isn't relevant to us, but it's still something that people can get excited about. What about you, Chao?
I think it's actually like one of the best shows they had, in my opinion. Like, you know, from a lot of shows that I've seen before, it's like, okay, they got nothing I want, and you just kind of skim through it. But this show, it literally has all the follow-ups to games that I love. I don't think there was much RPGs, though, besides the big reveal, right?
But, yeah, it started out slow, but I think by the end it peppered a handful in there. And by the end of it all, I think it was a decent balance.
But it's like, it started with like a huge, like, you know, big thing, which is like the remake of Code Veronica. That's actually one of my favorite Resident Evil games. I played it as a kid, and I love that game a lot, even though it's kind of have a pretty negative reception around the fan base, you know. But
it came out between 3 and 4. I'm not a Resident Evil person. It came out between 3 and 4, right? Or was it between 2 and 3?
After 4. I mean, not after, after 4, after 3.
Okay,
between after 3. Okay. So, most people originally thought it would be the Resident Evil 4 of the day, but, you know, it's not, you know, It has a lot of weird things that happens with it. It's released on Dreamcast as exclusive. Then they released the game again with, like, fixed a few things. Like, they fixed this side character, Steve Burns. He used to have Leonardo DiCaprio hair. And people hated it. And so so when they released it, they like, changed his hairstyle. And then they added some, like, extra cutscenes and stuff, and then they resold it as Code Veronica X. I don't know how this new remake is gonna go. I mean, it already looks different. Like, it starts the intro with some old lady that brings the person you're controlling in first person, then, oh, yeah, some guy grabs Claire by its neck, and you get the big reveal. So
it sounds like we're all pretty positive on it. And, like, we have cringed with everyone else at some of the worst Game Awards or Summer Game Fest, but this one, I think, ends up in the upper. Is it the best one ever? I'm not sure. I'd have to review them, but I thought this one was pretty good. So for this podcast, we have a lot of headlines to go through, and we're not going to hit absolutely everything. If we did, we would be here forever. We hit all the major highlights, and we're not doing it perfectly in chronological order, primarily because there was a handful of games that showed up both at the State of Play and at the Summer Game Fest. So to talk about it and then to pause and then to talk about it again would be a bit silly. So we'll kind of go into an order that's, like, most impactful, biggest headline for our site, and then kind of descend from there with, you know, otherwise it'll be arbitrary. So we'll go from that. We won't have a typical games talk section this week because there is one game that Mikhail and I will talk about a little bit, but I don't think either of us have gotten very far. So we'll mention it in passing as we go to the article shout outs. It's Gothic. The Gothic remake came out on the same day, and we both put some time into it, and I have some opinions on it, but I don't want that to be, like, what we start out with, because it feels a little bit incongruous. So we won't go to games talk. We'll do article shout outs, and we'll go through all the news. We'll feather in what we've been playing and what we think about that as it pertains to that news as we go through. So to stop bearing the lead, the biggest headline, at least for our site's purview, not what I'm most interested in, but probably the best for this podcast, just to be candid about it, is, of course, the finale of the show, the capstone of the stage show, the reveal of the last part of the Final Fantasy VII remake project, and that is Final Fantasy VII Revelation. We got a new trailer as well as a little bit of insight from the stage show at the very end. It is going to be releasing in spring 2027, and it is a worldwide simultaneous release across all platforms. So that's PC, PlayStation, Xbox, and Switch 2. So there's a lot of places we could tackle this. Mikhail, you're probably responsible for 4 or 5 articles up on the site for this. And then talking about not only Part 3, but Rebirth releasing on Switch this week. And then there's the details that we got from the show directly, as well as what's kind of filtered through after the fact from interviews with Japanese press, interviews with, like, Maximilian Dude. So I don't know if I have absolutely everything here. So this is not going to be comprehensive, but we at least want to talk about, of course, one of the biggest JRPG releases for 2027 immediately. Chao, what do you think about the reveal of Final Fantasy VII Revelation?
I think it was awesome. I think they revealed a little too much, but I think it's the last one they want to, like, make sure they nail this thing. At least that's how I see it. I just think they should have just held back a little bit. At least that's my opinion. But you can't win them all. But I think it's a great reveal.
What do you think, Mikhail?
I thought the trailer was, like, pretty fantastic. Just excited for, like, I was mainly excited to be surprised, I'd say. Or, like, surprised to be surprised, if that makes sense. Like, I'm just throwing words out. But, yeah, like, we're going to talk about it soon, but the trailer, I expected it to just be like, oh, here's, like, some key moments from the final part in the new engine and with new visuals. But they showed new costumes, like, mm-hmm. job system stuff, which we'll talk about. And the combat looks pretty fantastic. So I'm... Like, I've not hidden it that I've been pretty cool on Rebirth since the start. Like, we'll get to that soon when I talk about the Switch 2 port. But yeah, like, given what my opinion is of Rebirth itself, I'm happy with what they've shown so far. Like, they even teased the... Wasn't it the Emerald Weapon, like, for, like, 2 seconds,
coming out of the water or something, or am I?
No. That's a sapphire weapon. If you're talking about
Emerald weapon is the one which is underwater. Yeah, sorry about that. But yeah, like they tease the weapon, and I feel like the weapon fights are gonna be some like maybe you know like FF10's optional penance and all that, those optional super bosses. So I'm curious to see how they handle that. Cid looks great. Tifa's new costume looks great. You know, I was talking to my friend about the music in the trailer. Not much that they've played so far, but I was like, I missed the original Final Fantasy VII Remake soundtrack release, which they did because they did this thing where they made it like a meme where it was 7 discs for Final Fantasy VII Remake. But then if you bought it initially, it came with a bonus 8th disc, and I missed that, so I got so irritated. I never bought the Rebirth soundtrack as well. So I'm hoping with this they do some gigantic 30 CD soundtrack, which I can buy. But yeah, I'm going off on a tangent. So far, I'm very happy with how it looks.
I thought the way the trailer started was very interesting. It started like mid-2000s movie trailer, like voiceover and all that. And then eventually, like after 30 seconds, it kind of settled in. But the way it opened, I thought, I was like, huh, that's interesting. So yeah, of course the second game Rebirth, we're going to try to speak around spoilers as little as we can. So no spoiler warning, because we're not intending to talk spoilers. If we ever do tip into spoilers, we'll make sure that it's clearly marked on the timestamps. But we're not planning to talk spoilers, but, I mean, there are certain things that we don't know. And if you ever, like, the ending of Rebirth was very up to interpretation about what it meant. And even I think Alex put together a feature back when that released about like, okay, here's how we interpret, or at least he interprets the ending with some evidence and substantiation. And then of course, people are already going frame by frame in the footage that we have available for Revelation about what it means, where it might go. But we also do have some information, from Hamaguchi about Revelation. And I'm not going to go bullet by bullet here. But certain things like Zack's role is going to be greatly expanded. Of course, you know, we kind of even knew back when Rebirth was first teased that, you know, Zack, who is a minor character in the original release, but a much more important character in the like pantheon of Final Fantasy VII ever since the original release. So that's not really surprising. Wu Tai is, you know, going to be greatly expanded compared to the original game. It mentions that Midgar is going to be a fully explorable area, you know, which is not a surprise because in the original game you do return there. Talks about Rocket Town was originally planned to be in Rebirth, but now didn't make the cut for Rebirth, so now it's going to be here in Revelation. You already mentioned like the costumes, kind of like a cosmetic slash job system, a little bit about how that works. They're not planning to reduce the number of mini games. I kind of like that because that was one of Rebirth's biggest criticisms. Like, man, that's a lot of mini games for individual things. Like, nope, apparently Revelation is going to stick on that tact. Talk about how it's still going to be very open world. It's going to try to have a little bit of non-linearity, seems to be a little bit of the goal here. Some more emphasis on player choice and consequences. Hamaguchi even did say in an interview with Famico Gamer JP that there's going to be some like consequence that not everyone will experience the same events. I don't know how much I believe that or how much to what extent that'll matter, because that seems very antithetical to what Final Fantasy typically is, but maybe it'll be interesting to see if there's really some meat behind that. And there's a whole lot that I'm sure we'll talk in, go into here. Also, I'm going to mention it now just because I don't think we have it tiered up anywhere else in this higher rundown, but Tifa is going to be making an appearance in Street Fighter 6 as well. So a little bit of kind of cross promotion there. Go ahead, Mikhail.
Yeah, so you brought up the Tifa thing. I've seen some interesting response and reactions to that online. And like a good friend of mine who like is a huge Street Fighter fan is so angry about Tifa, not because he doesn't like Tifa. He loves Final Fantasy VII, but because they keep adding like newcomers or guests and not anyone from Street Fighter III, so he's like really annoyed about that. I kind of wish if I wasn't covering the news, I would have like just given him a phone call at that time and said, "Sup, bro." So yeah, that was funny. But yeah, you brought up Zack, and you know, like if you want to buy Final Fantasy VII Remake and Rebirth right now. On
by the way, not
Steam,
a spoiler, because he's so prominent on the key art. Like, yep, Zack is here. Like, yeah. Not a spoiler.
Yeah, so you can buy, they sell this thing called the Twin Pack, which has Remake and Rebirth together. I'm actually wondering whether they do a triple pack which also has Crisis Core, because Crisis Core is also on the same platforms except for like Switch 2, but you can play the Switch 1 version, and I kind of feel like you need to play Crisis Core. This is not like one of those, oh, you can't play Trails through Daybreak 2 if you haven't played like 10 other games or whatever. I kind of feel like they need to somehow get people to play Crisis Core before Rebirth or after Rebirth, before Part 3, because you should play that. So I'm wondering whether they do a Switch 2 upgrade of that, and whether they do a bundle. Because you remember when Rebirth was coming out on PlayStation and on Steam, they gave you a bundle which gave you like Remake for free if you pre-ordered Rebirth, or it gave you like Remake at a discount or something like that. So they're going to have to do all of this leading into what I imagine is the Game Awards for the actual release date for Part 3, and it coming out around March or whatever for like the financial year. So my main thing is like, how are they going to handle the Crisis Core thing to get people to play that?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I think it's interesting because when Crisis Core Reunion was first announced, I thought they were going to go bigger with it than they were, because it was kind of coinciding with the Remake trilogy, but it ended up being relatively like small scale for what it was. Like, obviously it's an updated version of the game and did do a lot of neat things, but it felt like they kind of held back. Like, they didn't add like a bunch of new story beats to it. They adjusted the gameplay in like some small but meaningful ways. But it still kind of sits as like a weird, like, oh yeah, Reunion's still there too. I suppose you should probably play that before this game so you can understand what's going on. But yeah, it's really interesting to see that the simultaneous release. Obviously, we've talked about Square Enix in multiple, you know, 20 different times about their release cadence and how they've shot their own foot in many cases across different IPs. And it's weird because, like, I'm a sucker for these games. I've played both Remake and Rebirth on PlayStation 4 and 5. Because that's where they came out first and I didn't want to be behind. But now I'm going to want to play Revelation on PC, but I don't have PC save files for Remake and Rebirth, so maybe I'll replay those, but do I actually have the time to do that? Do I really want to do that? I guess I could do it with streamlined progression on Rebirth, because they announced that, or they released that.
Well, you don't have to do that. You could just boot up the game and just have a save file. It only detects, like, you have a save file. It doesn't detect
how Yeah, I don't mean like, you know, there's this little save file carryover for like Moogle and Phoenix or whatever. But I just meant like my Steam, like, this is going to sound so like Steam pilled or poison brained or whatever. But like, it's going to say you have 0 hours played on Remake and Rebirth. You have no achievements, or you have like, you've played for 10 minutes. But I worked hard.
That's
on those
like
games,
my Steam account in a nutshell. I don't care about achievements too much.
I did those brutal combat challenges in the end of Rebirth, where you gotta fight like 10 bosses in a row, and the second to last one's Odin, and if you fuck up on him, he'll one shot you, and then you gotta start all over, and it sucks. And I did all that.
You can use the cheats now, like streamline progression.
Right, you wrote an article about that. Yeah. So yeah. Do the streamline progression in Rebirth? Does it disable achievements? Because that's important.
So yeah. So the thing is, in Remake, there was one achievement or trophy which got disabled if you enable all of it, which was the max the materia level, because you get one trophy for leveling up a materia. If you enable this, it disables that single trophy or achievement. So in Rebirth, you don't get a warning when you're enabling that. So I wasn't actually sure what happens with that, because I started everything and just enabled everything on like Xbox when I was playing it. But I just put a warning over there saying that to be safe, just level up a materia. Once you've got that achievement and trophy, then you can enable it, and because everything else doesn't affect your stuff, so you can go wild on that. But just before getting to the streamlined progression, and there's one thing I want to talk about there with Revelation. I've seen a lot of posts about, you know, like, it's coming to every platform, so like everyone's like, oh, I don't need to play it on PS5, I can play it on PC now. There's one thing which Square Enix has been getting worse over time with. Remake was a pretty shit port, bare bones, did not improve much post-launch, just became acceptable when it came to Steam because they improved it a bit. Rebirth is dog shit on PC. Like, you just cannot play it without stuttering. So I guess it depends on your tolerance for that, because if they are going bigger with Revelation, with open world, what happens in Rebirth is, obviously you've played it, it has more open areas, a lot of different unique assets. Anytime a new asset loads in, you're going to get hitching. In Remake, that wasn't such a problem because it was like kind of like a corridor closed game, except for like the marketplace. I forgot what it was called. Night Market. Like, I'm fake F7 fan. Walmart, yeah, after playing it like 10 times. So over there, it wasn't so bad, but it was still there. You could brute force it because like the game was very light to run. Rebirth is very heavy to run, and this is a problem. And I don't have faith in Square Enix because even the Adventures of Elliot and the Dragon Quest remakes also have Unreal Engine stuttering on PC, and these are not heavy games. And the Rebirth stuttering problem is not something you can brute force. Like, if James was here, his $10,000 PC cannot get rid of the stuttering. He can play it at like 3000 FPS if it supports that, but it's still going to hitch. Kind of like the Elden Ring problem, but it's more pronounced in Rebirth. So they need to like do something to fix that. Because the other issue with doing a simultaneous launch on all platforms is your launch is going to be, it's going to be coming in hot. Like, whatever they do, you're going to be shipping on multiple platforms for the first time. This is not a case where, you know, like PlayStation, the patch, like the game arrives, if they find a quest bug, they fix it. By the time it comes to PC, you have all the updates and all ready from the get-go. So that's another concern. But that's just like, you know, modern game releases always. Like, if you wait, you get a better experience. But I just do not have faith in Square Enix fixing the PC port stuttering, because they ship so many games which have that issue right now and none of them get fixed. So that's my big concern with the... And this is something which will affect Windows. It won't affect like Linux or Steam Deck as much, although that'll have its own issues with like just the game being heavy. But yeah, that's my concern with the day one PC release. Square Enix has not done a good job with their PC port. So yeah, you can play it over here. You don't need to like get your console or buy a new console. But at what cost, basically? Like, are you willing to tolerate that? Like, when I played, when I kept trying Elden Ring on PC, regardless of what I was doing, it just ran like shit. Like, the Tree Sentinel became a slideshow, and I can't deal with that. Like, I'd rather play with lower settings than deal with hitching. That's just how I am in games. So
that's my concern
with this. Yeah, that's my concern with Revelation. Like, they have not done any, like, you know, like Rebirth, when it came out, it had like good Steam CCU, all things considered. Didn't sell as much as I hoped based on the numbers, which, like, you know, Steam CCU estimates.
Did we ever get that, like, 3 million threshold on Rebirth?
No, we
remember
didn't.
That was like our white whale. Like, did Rebirth ever hit 3 million? Huh?
We didn't get any sales numbers for Rebirth at all. And like, my speculation on why that's happened is they were waiting for the Switch to an Xbox version. And what they'll do, this is again speculation on my part. What they might do is, so Rebirth, like, let's assume Rebirth sold 3 million on PS5, okay? Maybe they didn't want to say it for whatever reason, because they didn't want it to look like a big drop from Remake, which it obviously had. What I think they're going to do now is they're going to just announce that the Final Fantasy VII Remake series has crossed like 10 million sales across all platforms, because that's like a good way to like hide your actual sales and just make it look like a big number. This is just what my speculation with how they will announce it, because they've not announced Rebirth. They didn't announce Rebirth sales when it came to PS5. They didn't announce Rebirth sales when it came to PC. You had these analysts and, like, you know, the people who report on charts and all saying, you had all that pointless stuff. Like, you know, like, oh, Rebirth was like number five, like in the top five NPD when it came to PC. But like, that doesn't tell us any number. Like, that's just a meaningless stat. And now, like, I think we're going to have even less useful data on that front, because, like, you know, like Adam posts about the NPD or Circana, like, charts whenever they get announced in our staff chat, and we discuss it here and there. I don't know if you pay attention to the recent ones which we had.
Not really. I mean, it's one of those things where obviously I hope... Go ahead, and then I'll go.
No, the reason I bring it up is not for, like, what the charts were, but the fact that now Circana is going to use estimates combined with the actual data they have. And this was, like, one of the few, like, remaining bastions of giving you actual chart positions based on hard data. So now if you have estimates, like, quote-unquote polluting that, like, that chart becomes less useful to me. Like, I already have access to tons of estimates from, like, you know, Game Discover Co., which are based on actual, like, good results. Like, I've seen their data, and I'm confident in believing that for most games on PC. But now if you have, like, Circana putting estimates in their thing, it's just annoying that there's, like, when you have this gray area, people just speculate stuff, and it's just annoying to deal with. So I don't know what's going to happen with Rebirth or Remake series sales numbers, but I feel like it's just going to get a combined thing that, oh, the whole series has crossed 10 million across all platforms, which some people will celebrate. I don't know if it's good or bad for Square Enix. It's not a useful stat to me, but it's better than having Final Fantasy VII Remake has crossed 20 million players because it's been in PlayStation Plus and all that useless stuff. But yeah, this was like a off tangent on the PC port and of what I think of the sales and all that. But yeah, like, it's launching simultaneously. Very happy to see that. No more annoying discourse, hopefully, except for the usual FF7 discourse, which happens. But yeah, it's coming to everything day one. I don't know how that's going to affect my work at that point, because so far I've been like dealing with, oh, I've played Rebirth for like X amount of time on PS5. Now I can test the PC port and I have my PS5 context. Now I've played those two and I can play this, you know, the Switch 2 and Xbox versions. But now it's going to be like a brand new game on everything at once. So that's going to be interesting.
That'll be a fun launch week for you. But over time, you know, it's whenever we go back to like the early 2020s or like mid 2010s, and we have to see like multiple news posts across the year about this version launched, then this person was announced, and then this version launched. Like, you end up having like 7 or 8 news posts just talking about launch dates for different platforms. Like, all right, at least we're gonna avoid that. But back just to like what the game is, you know, framing itself as, and I don't want to be like a, you know, people have different opinions on the whispers, the story deviations. What does the context of Remake means? Obviously, you know, it's not a secret anymore that it's a sequel, not a remake. Whether or not that's a good idea or a bad idea is, you know, that's kind of a in the eye of the beholder or what you're expecting out of this project. But at the very end of, I don't know, at the very end, but near the very end of the trailer, it shows the whispers there. And then in the interviews, they talk about how if you go to Midgar, you might see some characters that are related to Deep Ground, which is, you know, obviously was added only after the original release. So very clearly going to have some sort of extended universe, for lack of a better term, implications in terms of which characters will appear, what the story will mean, how it might tie into the original story, etc., and all that stuff. So very clearly, they haven't shied away from that, which to me, when Remake was first played, I didn't like the whispers at all, and I'm still not a fan of them, but I appreciate that Square Enix has a vision and that they're going to like execute to that to completion, regardless of how I felt, you know, because they're making the game for a specific purpose in mind and a specific audience, and it's okay if I'm not totally jiving with that, so I'm trying to keep an open mind. But I'm interested to see, like, to what extent they, because I really didn't like how they executed at the end of Rebirth. It was a lot of will they, won't they. It was a lot of, you know, like we mentioned, well, what in the world did I just play? Now we need to speculate for years about what it meant and what is real and what is not, and that was kind of frustrating. But it kind of comes with the territory for the middle game of a trilogy. So in hindsight, perhaps not too out there. I'm looking at the other features that we have up on the site. We talked about, of course, Remake. We talked about Rebirth, Streamlined Progression. I do want to give this a quick shout out before we move past it. With the release on Switch 2, Cullen Black, our Switch expert, put together a little feature about having, you know, first played Rebirth on that platform. So we have kind of a Cullen feature for the Switch 2 version of that game up on the site. We kind of talked in passing about you kind of doing a quick little test about the Streamline progression when it relates to how it works and if it affects trophies and achievements. And then you have your kind of your big overall comparison between, now that Rebirth's on every platform, how it runs on Steam Deck versus PS5 Pro versus PC. Making sure I'm not missing anything. So I guess so.
One thing about the streamline progression. I'm actually, so because the game launched on Switch 2 and Xbox platforms with streamline progression for both Remake and Rebirth, and they were patched into PS5 and PC at the same time. Do we think they're gonna like have those day one for Revelation? Because you would not expect these things for like a brand new game, but then you've now conditioned your Switch 2 is not going to be a small audience for this. Like, Xbox, you can say whatever, but you have two full platforms that some people might be used to playing these games with those features from the get-go. So do we think they're going to be in Revelation from day one? Because it's not the streamlined progression. it's also a head start thing, which basically starts you out at like level 50 or level 65 or something like that. So I just wonder how they're going to deal with that, because you've now, there are going to be people who've like enabled some stuff, like, you know, if you just want to do max damage, or if you just want to not worry about money, you have those options. But if you take them away, people who use them will be like, oh, should I wait for this to come? So I'm leaning towards them being there, but not having everything enabled. I think they can't afford to not have them. What do you think?
I say no. I think that just for people that, you know, trying to catch people up to the latest game fast, you know, and they probably assume that people already played it already, but I would just say no. There's an easy mode in the game for a reason, you know? It's like, just turn on easy mode. You don't need the head start.
Progression saved me a shitload of time, because when I was playing on, like, first of all, doing the Rebirth prologue tutorial where you have to, like, do the slow crawling on the floor as Cloud, I just wanted to break something. I had to do that, like, 6 times. Piece of shit tutorial. Like, doing it on PS5 and Steam Deck whenever those ports came out was fine. Like, I was like, yep, I like the opening. But having to do that, like, 5 and 6 times again, not fun. So, yeah, like, having...
Well, that's a very specific use case, too. You,
but that's a use case, right?
I know. I'm just saying that, like, for... It's just use, like, having these features just saves time, and the fact that they are already there for people who've probably not played these games before. Like, you can't assume everyone who's playing Rebirth and Remake on Switch 2 has played it before. There's going to be a huge chunk of people who've never played it. So, like, you have difficulty options with granular control already. So I feel like they're going to have to keep them in some form.
I put my money on no, because it's not a feature.
I agree with
that,
you.
You know.
I agree with you, but I just think that they've sort of pushed themselves into a corner with how they've handled this release. Like, getting them in to catch up makes sense, but we'll see how that goes. But yeah, like, the
I kind of think that's just like not even about an interesting topic. Yeah. My opinion. It's like, whatever.
Just
I don't really care about it. Really, it's like the catch up.
Just this thing on Cullen's thing, when I was looking at, when I was giving his thing a read before we published it, he mentioned how Rebirth on Switch 2 feels like the PS4 port we never got. I was just laughing at, imagine if we had put that as the headline of the article, he'd have people like with pitchforks outside his door or whatever. So yeah, that was pretty funny.
I mean, it's
funny.
Not wrong. I did get to play it's Rebirth not... on Switch too. It was like, okay. There was a spare code and I did get to play it. And it's fine. I mean, I think it's the best experience you can get for a portable, you know. I think that's, you know, if you don't have a Steam Deck, especially how expensive.
So
it
the
is.
Thing about that is the way they, like, since Brian brought up my comparison, I'll just quickly touch on a few things over there. Just for some context, Rebirth launched on PlayStation 5. There was no PS5 Pro at that time. It had a quality mode and it had one performance mode. The quality mode was pretty good. Rebirth itself has some tech issues, which I've covered. Like, this is a kind of a different article I've done because I had to give a lot of context based on the platform launches. Rebirth is a massive, like, ambitious game, huge scope, but it has a lot of, like, low quality assets in the open world, bad lighting issues. Some of the textures look straight out of a Pokemon game or whatever, and I'm not exaggerating. It still has a shitload of unique assets which look amazing, but it's an inconsistent visual experience. The performance mode on PS5 at launch was, like, awful. I couldn't deal with that at all. And I've played, like, 100 plus hours of Witcher on Switch in handheld. So, like, this bothered me that, like, more than that. After that, they patched it into, like, tweak the performance mode where they gave you, like, a performance smooth or performance sharp option. I still don't think either of them is any good, but they did something over there. They brought it to PC, spoken about the stuttering issue already, but the PC version had DLSS support, which erased the poor upscaling issues which the PlayStation 5 version had. PlayStation 5 uses TAA, not great for this kind of game. PC version DLSS fixed the visuals as far as I was concerned, and yeah, that's what it was. When they brought it to Xbox and Switch 2 has DLSS support. Switch 2 ends up looking pretty decent, all things considered. But they had to cut down a lot of geometry objects in the environment, NPCs, foliage. Like, you know the chocobo thing where you're, like, doing the quote-unquote stealth to go behind a chocobo? There's, like, no grass in the Switch 2 version because they had to cut down that much. So there are issues like that. Like, when you're running around calm, I landed in front of a shopkeeper and I pressed X to interact or like A on the Switch 2 controller. I had to wait like 10 seconds for the shopkeeper to actually load because the pop-in was that bad. Like it was just stuck loading the texture for the character. So you have issues like that. Xbox Series X, kind of similar to base PS5, where you have the ugly performance mode, but the quality mode is good. There's one issue though. They released a demo on Xbox and Switch 2 like a month ago or a few weeks before launch. The Switch 2 version improved performance quite a bit since the demo, although they did cut down on like NPCs more. So I think it's a good compromise and they've delivered a solid version. It was like good enough where I was willing to buy it just to support the release or whatever. The Xbox version unfortunately did not get any performance improvement, so it runs worse than the PS5 version. This brings us to like the PS5 Pro version, which according to me is the only version which is acceptable at 60 FPS because the upscaling is really good and there's no stuttering. So if you value that and you have a PS5 Pro and a PC, I'd recommend playing this on PS5 Pro. But do read the article. I've given a lot of context. I've done a lot of testing. I had to like retest stuff because the day the Streamline Progression update went live, they added FSR support to PC. So it's not just DLSS and TAA and TAAU. It actually has FSR, which helps quite a bit for Steam Deck and other handhelds. But yeah, TLDR, according to me, the best version to play on TV is PS5 Pro. The best handheld or like the acceptable handheld version is Switch 2. So yeah, give that a read.
And then outside of tech stuff, just making sure I hit up all of the other things that have come out since the original reveal. You know, it's been less than 24 hours. They talk about how they're reworking the Affinity system. I thought their Affinity system in Rebirth was fine, but I'm still interested in seeing what they'll do there. Let's see here. Oh, a couple of voice acting changes. I guess in Japan, Reno will have a different seiyuu. And then in the US, they for reasons that are not 100% clear, Tyler, I'm going to mess up his last name, Hochlin, who is the voice of Sephiroth, was not available for reasons that we don't know the specifics to. So in Revelation, Sephiroth will have a new voice, and it's Travis Willingham of like Critical Role, like CEO and fame. So I don't know if that's a good fit, but it feels like it's not like a replacement, just... it is a replacement in execution, but out of scheduling or not able to get Tyler in the room. So interesting. We'll see how
Tyler has to play Superman back then, but that Superman show is over. So I thought maybe he'd be free. So
I mean, voice performances do take like sometimes you hear like I remember talking. Well, who was it? It was Ralph Ineson, who obviously voiced Lorath in Diablo 4 as well as Cid in Final Fantasy 16, and like he said he recorded all those voices like years ago before both games released. So sometimes like it could be that maybe the Sephiroth voiceover was, I don't know for sure, I'm guessing, was, you know, long in the can and was around when that Superman show was going. I no idea, but it's going to be Willingham in Revelation, just noting. Let's see here. Turks will have more focus in development. You'll have the Highwind from the beginning. The wear system's interesting. Obviously, this first showed up in the trailer. I believe it was Tifa in a different outfit. It's the first one that it shows. But it's going to have like some sort of like job light system. And as we speak into the microphone, I'm sure other details have proliferated out since that was shown. So maybe we'll be able to go into more detail once those get kind of solidified about exactly how that will work. But it's going to be available early in the game. So it's not like a late game cosmetic thing. Let's see. I think that kind of covers all the key details. Good.
I am happy they aren't toning down on the mini games. Even as someone who's joked about Rebirth, like some parts being mini game simulator, I like it when a director and producer just execute your vision regardless of what happens. I don't want focus tested shit, except for like, I will say one thing though. I hope they don't have those stupid shimmy between those rocks, like, you know, like the quote unquote AAA loading hiding nonsense. Like, you're making these games for like SSD systems now. Rebirth was a PS5 gen game. You don't need to put that stuff in. So yeah, like besides that, I'm happy that they aren't toning down. Do whatever, go wild. Like, we've been with this journey for like what, since when was the E3 of Dreams? Was it like 2013 or 2014 or something?
2015, I think.
Okay, so 2015 was the one which had Last Guardian, Shenmue 3, and it had this. Like, we've been there since that, you know, like Hashimoto-san said, please be excited, and he dropped FF7 PC port on PS4. Like, we've been
Oh, man, it's. I feel like this is all super recent history, but it was 10 years ago. I think that was the year prior, 2014.
Been like so long, so like I just do whatever, man, go wild, like I'm here to see what happens.
Well, I remember Josh, good or bad, our reviewer on Rebirth, was he thought it kind of felt like a almost like an homage to PlayStation 1 PlayStation 2 area RPGs, just to have that so many mini games in there. It felt like almost like an exercise in excess. Like, sure, we can program and design and execute all these mini games. Why not? Who's going to stop us? So it is like it's an interesting thing to have as like a vision of your game, but it's also kind of charming in a way. And in Rebirth, none of the mini games, if you wanted achievements and stuff, sure, but none of the mini games, you didn't really have to engage with them if you didn't want to. So hopefully they hit a same balance with Revelation. But I enjoyed like actually trying to maximize, for whatever reason, speaking a few years removed, the one that I struggled with the most that I really had to like lock in was like the Cactar hitting mini game with the different characters, doing that with Yuffie, for whatever reason, I really struggled with. So that was the mini game where I was like pulling my hair out. Like,
that's weird. I thought you would struggle more with the Aerith one because Aerith was kind of slow in combat. So
Aerith was also difficult.
The Cactuar one, you can use the streamline progression because there's an option which does max damage in mini games. So I think
Mikhail that with his streamline, there was no streamline progression when we were there back.
I'll just know as Mikhail is a cheater. That's all. Yeah. Never play any game legit.
And of course,
even when I beat him, he said that I lost. Even that's
in what Undernight 2.
And we have a lot of other news. We have a lot of other news to get through, so I think we'll have to. We will be, of course, discussing Final Fantasy Revelation, Final Fantasy VII Revelation, from now until its release, and not too long. Like we said, spring 2027, so less than a year away. Could be as little as like 8 months away, depending on how you define spring. But really cool to see, really cool that was the that was the highlight. Sometimes, you know, over the years, it's always been a little bit of a criticism that these Western stage shows need more Japanese presence, and maybe Final Fantasy making presence is a low bar. People I saw were kind of disappointed at the lack of Nintendo, but I think that's kind of also not a surprise. But it was still really cool that this was decided as the capstone, better than what happened at the Game Awards. So we'll go with that.
This is not High Guard, right?
Yeah, that's what I was referring to. Yes, Joe. All right, we have a lot of other headlines here. So before we get into the headlines, there's just a handful of other features that I at least want to shout out on our RPG site before we go to the headlines. So one of them, and I'll go to this one because it's related, is that you have a feature up on the site with Hitoshi Sakamoto talking about different games that he's worked on in terms of Vagrant Story, 13 Sentinels, Ogre Battle, and everything that he's done. So do you have any like key takeaways from this interview that you put up? When did this go live?
This went live, I believe, Sunday or Monday. Gotcha. I don't remember.
So about a week ago.
Like 6 or 7 days. Yeah. So this interview was basically because he has a concert, I believe, next week as of this recording in London, Colors of Harmony, celebrating his career. So this was an interview op which Alex did, or Alex set up, and it's a bit like, just if you've read the thing, or like if you haven't read it, basically this interview was done on call, and it was actually interpreted by Kathy Cat and Robert Cephazon, who are working on Deltarune. Like, Robert Cephazon is a producer on Deltarune, so that was pretty crazy to see, like, he was interpreting it with Kathy Cat on the call. So yeah, the interview happened about a few weeks ago, and it was pretty, like, I've been a huge fan of his for a long time, so you know, you have limited time and live interpretation, so you can only touch on a few topics. But yeah, the interesting thing is he does want to revisit Ivalice. He would like to see a new story over there. He really, really wants to do Ogre Battle. Like, he wants to revisit that. I got to ask him about 13 Sentinels, which is one of my favorite games in ages and one of my favorite soundtracks. Was very happy about that. Discussing how they ended up, you know, when FF12, the Zodiac Age came out, they could do a full orchestral soundtrack. So basically for that release, they had the budget allocated and he was happy with that. How he became a composer, like he just randomly started doing it, stuff like that. And just to like end it, I asked him about coffee and that was like one of the most bizarre responses I've gotten, where he just takes instant coffee, mixes it in cold milk and drinks it so you can crunch on the granules. And I tried this and it was disgusting. So yeah, that was funny.
People, yeah, read the people can like what
not,
they like.
Not as long as, yeah. It's not as long as my like other interviews, like the Hades, the Supergiant one was like 10,000 words or something. But yeah, I think it's worth reading if you're a fan of like Final Fantasy 12 Tactics, the Ivoli stuff, or even Vanillaware, because like he's done so much stuff. Like I also asked him about shmups, like shoot 'em ups, because he used to play that when he was younger, and he was just talking about how when you play shmups you get into this like zen like state where the time moves slow, and he's like, I use that same logic when I'm composing music and stuff. So yeah, give it a read. Very happy with how that turned out. I think like I don't like, you know, I never do this, don't like tooting my own horn, but like I'm very just super happy with some of the interviews recent times and last year. So like I hope to keep doing more of them.
Another feature I'll shout out, though, he'll be able to speak to it more next week when he's returned. But we talked a little bit about, you know, James and others playing Ace Combat over the last couple weeks. And we got the announcement of Ace Combat 8 Wings of Thieves. This wasn't at Summer Game Fest. This was at the State of Play, right? And James put together like an op-ed, a branching path. So not, you know, something that we explicitly know is not really in the RPG space, about his his preview on-hand opportunity with Ace Combat 8. So I'll kind of leave it at that for now, because I am not an Ace Combat person and I want James to be able to speak to it next week. But just saying that it is live on the site. So if you follow us, if you're in the intersection of, you follow RPG site, you listen to this podcast and you like Ace Combat and you're looking forward to Ace Combat 8, if you're at the intersection of that Venn diagram, then we have an article up on the site from James for you about that. And this last one, I don't know how much we'll talk about this, because I plan on talking about it further at length once I get more time into it. But on the day of Summer Game Fest, literally released yesterday, the long, I don't know if anticipated is the right word, but the release of the Gothic 1 remake by Alchemia Interactive did finally launch. So I'm planning on reviewing this, and I know you also were able to put up a feature about it, about attempting to play this game on things like Steam Deck and ROG Ally. But the review code was really late and I didn't want to like completely kill myself to hit an embargo for an arbitrary reason. So I'm going to take my time and play through the game and write up a full review and then talk about it at length. But I know I put a couple of hours in and you put a little bit more time into it. And I do want to talk about it just in passing, just to kind of introduce it. So I don't want to... and obviously, this also kind of comes second to all of the big news from the Summer Game Fest, so I don't want to distract from that too much. So I'm a little bit of a liar. Like, I did not play Gothic in 2001. I'm not an old head in that sense. I only played it back in April. But when I played this, I don't know what I was expecting, because the demo that they had last year or the year before was not received well. The reviews for Gothic 1 Remake from those that did get out reviews were not great. So I was like, oh man, maybe this really isn't that good. And I'm not far enough in to tell you whether it's good or not, but it is surprisingly faithful. Like, having just played Gothic in April, I'm playing this and I'm like, oh wow, they laid out this map the same. Oh wow, the NPCs are in the similar location. Oh, these quests, I remember these quests. Oh, these enemies, I remember them being, you know, a bastard and I should avoid them. And it felt like returning home in a way. Now again, returning home from something I played 2 months ago, not 20 years ago. So I don't know what it feels like to be returning to Gothic from those that originally played it when it originally released. But that is my immediate takeaway right away, is that it feels like an RPG, for better or for worse, from the early 2000s. What do you think, Mick?
So I had not played it back then as well, because 2001 was this weird time in my life with gaming where my PlayStation 1 was given away because I was playing it too much, and I used to play a lot of wrestling games back then, not RPGs, funnily enough. So this was like the time when I believe I had a laptop and I was just interested in GTA. So I had not even heard of Gothic until actually it came to Switch, because I was like, THQ Nordic announced Gothic. I was like, what the hell is this or whatever. So I ended up playing it when it came to Switch. It was very interesting, difficult, like very, very difficult. And the remake so far feels pretty faithful to that. Like, it just feels like I'm, you know, like how Oblivion Remastered is just Oblivion, but in Unreal Engine 5, Gothic 1 remake kind of feels like that, but also in the bad ways, because it like runs like shit on PC handhelds. But I don't know, the voice acting, the dialogue options, everything just feels like what I remember of playing Gothic Classic on Switch, except it controls a bit better. It's still very challenging, like these random birds with no wings or whatever are killing me and stuff. Random diggers, if I just walk near them with a sword, they get angry and they kill me or whatever. So I'm doing the saves coming and all that. So as for the game itself, like I was supposed to get PS5 code on launch day, which was yesterday as of this recording, but it's not shown up yet because I'm not playing this on PC. I know you are playing it on PC, and we got code quite late. So I honestly am surprised, like assuming everyone else got code at the same time you and I got code, I'm surprised anyone was able to even put up a review, because isn't Gothic like 30 hours minimum?
About, like, yeah. Well, it's the sort of game that, depending on how much you like it, you can really, you can speed run it if you know exactly where to go, or you can take your time and take 100 hours. But average, here, actually, let me look at my Gothic 1 playtime, where I kind of did everything. I put it on GOG, right? I was looking at my Steam count. Does GOG even keep track of playtime? I forget. Let's see. Owned games. Gothic. Does it say how long I played it? It doesn't. Darn it. Oh, yeah, it did. 25 hours. So it's a 25-30 hour RPG. Yeah. So I guess if you know Life Date, you could probably do it. But yeah, speaking about the dialogue and the voice acting, like what I mean when I say it feels like an early 2000s RPG is that if you're playing this game, either A, you've played Gothic 1 before, or B, you are smart enough and cognizant enough to know and understand that this is a very faithful remake of an early 2000s RPG, and you're expecting that going in, I think you'll be fine with it. However, if you're like, oh, Gothic, that's an interesting RPG series that I've heard it talked about on the Tetracast, maybe I should try it. It's very stilted. There is no character creator, so you just kind of get generic dude, the same guy in all the trailers. Your voice acting is pretty mid. The dialogue is very terse, and it's very much like, I have quests for you. Can you do a task for me? Sure. Can you tell me about the area? Like, it's not like realistic dialogue. It's not more than what it was. I guess that's a good way to put it. Gothic 1 Remake is not more than what Gothic 1 was. And if you're expecting that, or if you're, and I'm not saying like, if you're expecting more, you're wrong. It's just like, no, if you're expecting more, you're not going to get it. And you're probably going to have a lower opinion of the game. And that's perfectly valid. But it's got the same feel that playing Gothic 1 had, in terms of, A, the quality of the voice acting, it's about the same, I would say, so far. The dialogue is, yeah, it's about the same. It's very staccato. It's very much like, you know, what I said. It is challenging in the terms of, like, you are poor as shit. You are weak as shit. Not only are you poor as shit, when you run around the old camp, guards will ask you for money, for protection money. If you don't pay them, they'll attack you. And you will be poor, and you will be broke, and you will be weak, and you'll have to figure out how to deal with that. Which I'm actually glad that they did not streamline it in any way. Well, I don't want to say in any way, because I haven't played it long enough to know for sure, but at least the initial impressions, it feels as much of an uphill climb as it was originally. And I think that if you were someone who wanted to know, like, is Alchemia Interactive going to do right by Gothic? If they had compromised on that, I think that would be like a reputation killer. Like, oh, wow, I can't believe they did this. So it's still very challenging. It's still very stiff. And by stiff, I mean, like, not only in how it feels and looks, but how it, like, how it looks and how it feels. Like, when you go to talk to someone, you will, like, turn to face them. And it's got that BioWare face where the dialogue trees are very uncinematic. It's just you standing in front of someone else going through the dialogue. Mid-2000s RPG. It's not presented in a way to make it fanciful. It's very like it's a very much like a very grimy RPG. Does that mean it's good or not? I don't know yet, but I have enjoyed what I've played so far more than I expected to. I think because it has been made so faithfully, and I kind of knew what I was expecting going in because I had so recently played it. But if you're like a fan of, I'm trying to think of this. If you're a fan of like The Witcher, or you've played. I'm trying to think of like a similar RPG. You're looking forward to Blood of Dawnwalker, and this seems like something kind of similar. It doesn't feel like a game from 2026 in terms of production values, in terms of how the game flows. So if you're expecting that, you're gonna think less of it. But and I'm not surprised that you're saying it's kind of a technical mess on Steam Deck and at ROG Ally. I have a really strong PC. It's not James, but it's pretty good. And I think I can brute force through a lot of issues, but I'm getting like I have to turn on DLSS. I can't run it natively. Even I'm getting some weird like light flickering issues. I'm not sure what's causing. It does have frame gen. I'm trying to not turn that on because I try not to use that, but I might want to if I want to hit above 60 FPS consistently. And it's not that pretty of a game. It looks like boilerplate Unreal Engine, but I think it does look pretty good.
Are you getting any stuttering though?
A little bit. Not as bad as Elden Ring, but yes.
Okay.
Also, one thing about just the gameplay that's kind of interesting, that's kind of been frustrating, is it's hard to see when you have an item that you can interact with. Like you'll find like something that just looks like it's part of the environment art, but then when you get like literally 6 inches away from it, you finally get the tooltip that says, "Oh, you can pick up that apple that was sitting on that table. It's not just, you know, artistic." So I'm like, there's no, as far as I can tell, and hopefully I haven't missed it, there's no way to like highlight objects like by holding tab or something, but there is an accessibility option that says highlight objects in the world to make them more easy to see. And I'm like, oh, maybe, you know, I've never turned on an accessibility option for that, but maybe that will just help me out here so I don't miss something just because I thought it was painted into the background. But it only highlights the object when you're close enough to interact with it anyway. So if I'm standing 2 feet away from a bush that has berries on it, I can't see it. Or like I can see it, but I don't know, unless I've committed it to memory, what exactly it looks like, that I can pick that up and it's useful. Unless I get like right on top of it and then the little tooltip shows up and then it says, oh, you can pick this up. Which is what that means is that I'm going like around people's houses, like standing on tables, trying to see like, can I pick up anything? Or is there anything here I can actually use? Or is it all just artistic? So I hope they kind of tweak that. Small tweak, just show that little pickup tooltip about 50% further out would be nice. But I guess here's my last like initial thought on Gothic 1 so far. Again, I'm only like 4 hours in, so enough to really get a feel for it, but I'm still like putzing around the old camp, for instance, is that this game to me seems faithful enough that I do think I might regret these words, but I do think that you could, if you wanted to experience Gothic and you hadn't played the original, I think you could play this as a substitute. Is it going to be identical? And are there big changes in the back part of the game? I don't know yet. So the original game, it starts out very open in chapter one and then really kind of funnels at the end of the game due to development costs, or I'm not sure exactly what. So maybe there's significant departures at the end of Gothic, and I haven't read other reviews. That's going to make me regret that I said that. But at least putzing around the old camp in the early parts of the game, it feels like, yeah, this is the Gothic I remember. It feels like, you know, a suitable, faithful replacement with the same flaws that the original game had. So there you go. I guess I'll talk more at length in a future episode to see if I stand by those words or not.
Just one quick thing before we move on. I just skimmed through some other reviews and impressions. Apparently the game is capped at 30 FPS on console, including PS5 Pro, which is kind of hilarious based on how it looks. So yeah, but
it's not a well-performing game. Post.
yeah, they did put out a Steam blog post about improving some save deletion issues, some crashes, and I did have this. I don't know if you had this issue or not, but I had this thing where like I had to play on the low preset because on Steam Deck, because you cannot play it otherwise, and the shadows just are like blocky and they kept flickering and disappearing. But the ROG Ally can actually run this at with decent-ish visuals, all things considered, but the hitching is just too bad, so like I gave up on that. It does, like, based on what I've played of this and based on what I've played of Gothic Classic, the opening 5 hours I'd say feel pretty faithful. It feels like Oblivion Remastered, like you're playing the old game with new visuals for better or worse. So if you did want that, I will just give one shout out to the soundtrack. I think the soundtrack is fantastic.
It is good. Yeah, so, the sound in the camp and the sound outside the camp, it's really good. I don't have the soundtrack for Gothic memorized. Put them side by side to see like if it's just a re-rendition of what was there. I don't know, but what's in Gothic 1 Remake is good so far. I agree. All right, with that, we're an hour in. We've talked about Final Fantasy and we've talked about some other shout outs. Time to go into the rest of the news rundown. So we'll put a big bold statement here on this part of the timeline for timestamps. So for everything else that was announced this week, here we go. In no particular order, and depending on who we have here, we might be able to talk about certain things more or less just because we don't have Adam, Josh, or James here to speak to things that they would normally be like an authority on. But to start out, and again, in no particular order, we got the announcement of, we were expecting this to be announced at some point. It seems like a pretty good timing for this. The announcement of the expansion for Monster Hunter Wilds. Of course, Monster Hunter Wilds originally released about a year and 4 months ago, a little early 2025. Famously had one of the worst PC launches ever. It was really bad. Like people could not, they had to roll back their drivers so that their game would not crash as soon as they saw a monster. I have not booted up Monster Hunter Wilds in a while, but they've announced Monster Hunter Wilds Ascendance. It's going to be coming out in 2027. It's going to take the story of Monster Hunter Wilds to like Sky Islands. It's going to be the return of Master Rank. It's going to be the return of Elder Dragons. We got, of course, a launch trailer for this game. And also, the team at Capcom has announced alongside that Monster Hunter Wilds is also in work in dev for Switch 2, which is a cool surprise that I don't know if we expected. So any thoughts on the Monster Hunter Wilds Ascendance announcement?
Yeah. So, before the Ascendance, I'll just quickly go over the Switch 2 thing. So when they pushed out some updates a few months ago, data miners found references to Switch 2 and NS2 stuff. At the time, I didn't believe it because like the game on PC was so poorly optimized. Like there's like a misconception that the game quote unquote runs like shit on console. The thing is, it does not run like shit on console. It's actually the best performing Monster Hunter game on any like the console it launched on. I think people have forgotten how bad World on PS4 was and how Rise was on Switch. Like they ran like shit compared to this. Like I was there from pre-release. So yeah, the thing is, Monster Hunter Wilds is a very, very heavy game. They've been, you know, this was one of those infamous games that had a optimization roadmap. Like you have early access. Like it was embarrassing for Capcom to do this for like one of the most important platforms, or like the platform they consider the most important. So on Switch 2, people found like data mined. They found assets pointing to local wireless multiplayer. They found even like some of the default settings which the Switch 2 would use for like DLSS and stuff or something. So I kind of expected it at some point. I just thought it would be in a Nintendo Direct, but they kind of announced this weirdly. Summer Game Fest had the Ascendance trailer and they just tweeted out and they sent in the press release like a subtitle. Oh, it's also in the works for Switch 2, like the base game. So We'll see how that goes. I don't expect much from it based on how like Resident Evil 9 and Pragmata, the downgrade compared to the PS5 version and having like 300 hours in Wilds on all platforms, I don't expect much, but I'm looking forward to be surprised. As for Ascendance, they seem to be doing everything right in terms of addressing player feedback. They brought Elder Dragons back. They showed Kushala Daura. I hate Kushala Daura, so like Show someone better.
Everyone does.
They teased Lao Shan Lung. They teamed Lao Shan Lung or Long, however you pronounce that. The annoying siege monster from like the 3DS Monster Hunter 4U, but or was it in GU also? I've forgotten. Like
this is where my memory James. Is really I've only bad. Played like, since I've, World. Yeah.
No, I've played like, I played hundreds of hours of 4U, and GU was like one of my most played games on Switch 1. Like I imported the Japanese release without knowing Japanese because I was so hyped for that. So it is in GU. Yeah, I remember getting help from like Discord friends because it was such a dog shit mission. So yeah, like they teased that. They showed some returning monsters. They showed a new monster. They showed new actions and they said every weapon is going to have new actions, which is typical for Monster Hunter Master Rank and stuff. I'm a bit concerned about them saying 2027. Like, you have to assume Capcom is going to, like, shit it out whatever happens before March, because they need to have a big thing for their financial year end. But I don't know, like, they need to do a lot to get people who, like, performance issues aside, a lot of people have just dropped Wilds because they kind of got rid of the friction, right? Like, you said you haven't played it in a while because you just use the secret and, like, use it as an Uber, get to your location. And the way they handle the quests on the map is if you want, like, the rarest drop for some monster, you can just see it, like, oh, if you do this quest, you'll get a guaranteed drop of the jewel or the gem or whatever. So they need to, like, remove some of that and get back.
Yeah, I've not played any of the title updates. I think for me on Monster Hunter is just that less of an indictment of the game. Well, the game itself was, you know, poorly received. Well, technically speaking. And some consider, and also, like, with terms of the story and the progression, people thought it was very streamlined. But I think also I put like 800 hours into World and like 200 hours into Rise. I think I was just burnt out for Wild. Like, I'm like, all right, I don't need this in my life right now. I've gotten this experience done. So that's kind of where I was with Monster Hunter Wilds. I'm with the announcement of Ascendants. I kind of want to pick it back up and at least poke at it for the title updates. But I still don't know if I really want to, like, dive all the way back in like I was in the World days. I was there every update. I was doing every time they added a new dragon, I'd figure out how to beat it. I even did all the thing with the what's the one that you have to, like, completely change your build to an elemental build, Alatran. You can see
it. Alatrion, where it had the DPS check. Yeah, the DPS.
Yeah, and you had to, like, re-gear. You couldn't use the gear that worked on everyone else. And I did all of that. Then for Rise, I kind of took it, like, half-heartedly. I did most of it. I ended up beating, like, the final challenge that they added at the end of everything. But then for Wilds, I just wasn't feeling it. I just was like, all right, I've done all this. I don't need to do it again. The game isn't good enough for me to really get sucked back in. But maybe for Ascendance, I'll give it another go. Hopefully the PC.
You know what I think happened?
Yeah.
They basically have tried to push this as World 2. Like, they even had a save data bonus from World and not Rise in this because, like, despite, like, online discourse for Monster Hunter where some people look down on the quote-unquote portable team, it's just a different team, like, with a different leader at that point.
Well, internally, isn't World 5 and Wild 6?
Yeah, it is. Yeah. But the fact is, if you talk about GU and, like, Rise as the portable game, some people still look down on that. Like, I'm not saying it in that way. It's just a different team with different design sensibilities. But what's happened with Wilds is they kind of wanted it to be World so much that they even did the same seasonal event structure. They did the same update cadence, and that kind of doesn't work because the games industry is in a different place now. Like, people are used to full live service stuff where you have, like, every week or every month something coming, you have new content coming. You can't do the same reset where, oh, here's the base game, you have to, like, wait for the expansion to get all the monsters and the features and title updates. You can't do that anymore. Capcom learned that with Street Fighter 6. Like, they shipped a massive, like, after learning the hard way with 5, and 5 recovered in, like, eventually, but, like, Street Fighter 6, like, over delivered. So they kind of, I'm surprised they actually, like, messed up Wilds' launch in that sense so much. Like, how do you, this is a game that you have to focus test, and, you know, like, people should have told them this when they were developing it, that you can't do this. Like, people are used to Fortnite and Genshin Impact now. They're not going to deal with your, oh, come back in 2 months when we get this event quest back and all. That doesn't fly anymore. So I think they learned that way because they even gave up on the FOMO stuff with events and they made most of them permanent. So that was a step in the right direction. But Ascendance, the problem with that is it's a paid thing, right? You have people who have paid money for Wilds and are not happy with it. How are you going to convince them to pay money for the expansion? And the expansion is going to be expensive. It's going to be at least $40 or if not 50, because World and Rise were $60. So the expansion was 40. I imagine they want to do 50. Which is going to be a tall order for people who've just dropped the game because they didn't like the design, they didn't like the gameplay, or they were not happy with the performance. Like, I've been playing it on PS5 Pro, and this kind of has the rebirth issue where they use the lowest quality upscaling they could use, so the game just looks bad on console. And on PC, it's just too heavy. So when I play it on PS5 Pro, I get good upscaling with locked 60 FPS, so I'm happy with it, but it still has the same issues. And as for the title updates, if you ever do want to get back to it, I can tell you that the title updates added a lot of, they have a lot of meat on the bones. It's not just fluff which they've cut from the base game, like the Omega collaboration they did with the FF14 stuff, is the best collab they've done in Monster Hunter history. It's also one of the most challenging quests in any base game Monster Hunter you'd have, period. And they had a savage version of the Omega raid in Monster Hunter Wilds. I guarantee you that's tougher than anything in World and like Rise, like without question. So they did add that, but the problem is you have people that just dropped the game, so they weren't willing to come back for that. So that's good luck to Capcom trying to like sell people on this. That, like, I'm obviously going to be there because like I have 2,000 hours in World and Iceborne. I even have like 600 hours in Rise, and Rise is a game which had jack shit to do until Sunbreak. Like, it was... did you play Rise on Switch or were you on PC? Just sort of
on PC. I played a tiny bit on Switch, but primarily on PC.
Okay, so the Switch version at launch was so bad that it did not even like bank your Hunter rank points. So you know how in the story, until you do a specific monster, your Hunter rank will be like capped at level 6 or level 8. And then when you do that, they'll uncap it. Rise on Switch did not even bank your Hunter rank points. So I had like 100 hours plus pre-release. When the Hunter rank cap got removed, I was still at like Hunter rank 20 or 10 or whatever. Like, the game was just, they had to rush it out for the financial year. And that's something which I'll never forgive them about. If I ever interview them, I'm going to bring that up. So yeah, like that game was in early access, I call it, until the May update, which added Valstrax and Camellias and all that stuff. So like, it was really bad for those first 2 months. And Rise did not get any post-launch support until Sunbreak. Like, they just abandoned it or whatever. So there's a lot, like, as someone who's been pre-release, post-release with all the Monster Hunter games since like Generations or whatever, like I Capcom has like a huge task ahead of them with this. With Switch, they'll get some people on board, but at what, like, how are you going to sell more people on this? You have like 13 million sales or whatever. You need to like convince most of them to like pay $50 for a game when a lot of them don't play it anymore. So yeah, good luck to them. Expansion trailer looks good and all, but this is one thing where they're going to have to release, you know, one of those demos which gives you like a sample of the new monsters, a sample of the new moves, and it says, oh, here's your updated technical performance, and also like, this is how the full game is going to be when the update launches. Yeah, they're going to have a lot to do to prove themselves on this.
The next announcement, again, in no particular order, is that we got the initial very early look at the next project from Shift Up, of course, the publisher and developer of, well, not the original publisher, but the developer of Stellar Blade, a game that did, you know, very well when it released in mid-2024, originally on, you know, PlayStation exclusive, eventually made its way to PC. Chao, you really thought really highly of Stellar Blade, right?
Yeah, I think it was real good.
So Shift Up announced Stellar, just to not bury the lead, but Shift Up announced Stellar Blade Blood Rain. So still very early, no release window. This is just an initial look, reveal of the concept art of the title and the story premise. Starring a new character. Now this, Chao, is where I might need to lean on you or lean on Mikhail, because I never played the original Stellar Blade, but there's a new protagonist, Evie. The trailer kind of introduces her and gives some context for, you know, the new conflict. But Chao, what do you think of the Blood Rain reveal?
I think it looks great because what is it? It has like a fist combat, like, I don't know, it's like hand-to-hand combat that you see. Mm-hmm. And so Evie uses, you know, just her punching, like a boxing kind of style. I don't know, mm-hmm. That looks kind of new to me. I like kind of hyped to play it just because of like the combat looks fun. Right. But I don't know, it's story-wise, I don't know if it's a prequel or a sequel. That's the thing. I think a lot of people are debating where it takes place. Just because, like, what is it, like, humans are, like, kind of dead in the main story of Stellar Blade, right? And this world that you see in Blood Rain, it's, like, it's full of people. So either Eve succeeded in reviving the human race, or this takes place before the fall of the human race kind of thing. So, I don't know. Everyone just can't seem to figure out if it's a sequel or a prequel right now.
But I think they didn't call it Stellar Blade 2 because everyone would have expected Eve, and they wanted to do something different. But interesting things about this is, one is it's self-published. It's not like Stellar Blade 1 or just Stellar Blade was published by Sony on PlayStation 5, excuse me. And it was actually published by Sony even on PC. That was like a...
Oh, okay.
And it was their best performing game on Steam and like concurrence for single player like ever. It like just shattered all the records and all that. So It's interesting that they want to self-publish. They probably want to be on like all platforms day one, because they've not announced platforms, they've not announced the release window. Trailer looked good to me. The music, like Stellar Blade's music, is incredible. I think a lot of people wrote it off for because of the trailer and whatever, like they didn't like the demo, but I think the soundtrack is genuinely incredible. Even if you don't play the game, you should listen to the soundtrack. I have not finished all of the game because they added a lot of post-launch. They added DLC, they added Nikkei and Nier collaboration stuff. I actually re-downloaded the game and I thought I should give it a go and finish it finally. And it's quite good on PS5 Pro also. Like, it has so many new modes and stuff, so I enjoy that. So I got that downloaded to play. I was playing some of it today. The new Stellar Blade, I just think it's not called Stellar Blade 2 because they want to like do that with Eve as like a, you know, their next thing. They probably had this as like this project was maybe in the works at the same time and they wanted to try something different. I think it looks nice. Protagonist, I don't know, like I'm not sold on the design yet or anything, but the combat looks fine. Combat looks good, music looks good. I don't know when we'll see it next, because the fact that there were no platforms but they confirmed it's being self-published, I have a feeling it might be at you think it might be at the Xbox show, because like, oh, here's a game which we're bringing to Xbox and you can download the original now, it's available now as a shadow drop. Because I think a lot of people forgot that Stellar Blade was originally announced, like I think it was tentatively titled Project Eve or something, and at that time it was confirmed for PlayStation, Xbox and Steam. And it just like at some point Sony stepped in to help with the project and it became PlayStation 5 exclusive. So I feel like maybe we might see it at the Xbox show, which is tomorrow as of this recording. But
you,
yeah,
you
like,
know that
they
trailer
didn't
has a, I was going to say that trailer has a lot of PlayStation bone props. I just, it's like, I don't know, you know, in a show that's mainstream for everything, don't they usually just like use PC button prompts or something like that? No,
I think
it's
like,
I don't know.
Piece, like, I mean, usually you'd use Xbox buttons because that's what people associate with like PC controllers, everyone using Xbox, but a lot of people use DualShock and DualSense controllers on PC, so maybe they
I feel like maybe was, 10 years ago it would be Xbox controllers, but now like
now
DualSense on PC is pretty common. Yeah,
I don't know, I just feel like they'll have a little note that says footage capture on PC, and you know, it's gets to showcase the best graphics available, right? And then next thing you know, it's like you see like PlayStation button prompts, like, oh, maybe they're, you know, deep into the PlayStation, but maybe this is just getting too conspiracy theory things into it. So I don't know, but you can wait for the next show, see if it shows up on it. But I am really hyped for this. So, just mostly from the gameplay, I think the hand to hand combat looks insane. So at least that's for me.
Yeah, I think what I played of Stellar Blade, I don't really care about most of the story. I enjoyed the game a lot. I enjoyed the boss fights a lot. I like the designs also. I pretty much like almost everything with the original. So I want to finish it though. Like, that's my problem with it. I need to like find time and finish it. But it's been hard playing anything not work related because of the billion news things in the last week. So hopefully, like, by the time I'm on the podcast next, I've at least finished the base game and, like, done some of the Nier DLC. We'll see.
This next announcement is one that is near and dear to my heart, even though I don't know if it had the widespread appeal of the other announcements. This is an announcement from ArenaNet, and they announced, with a new trailer, Guild Wars 3. So I have been a longtime fan of Guild Wars. It's not something that I really cover on the site outside of talking about it on this podcast, because I kind of grew up with the game and I didn't want to make it like my job. So Guild Wars is something that's near and dear to me, so I cannot be unbiased about it. The interesting thing here, if you're like not a fan of Guild Wars or of MMOs, and you're like, why should I care? First of all, I can't make you care. But I think the interesting thing here, as someone who's basically been with the series since the beginning, is that the main difference is that they've announced Guild Wars 3. They say that it's going to be coming to PS5 and PC. So this is the first time Guild Wars has ever been on a console. It had been PC only until Guild Wars 1 Reforged made its way to mobile, and now Guild Wars 3 is going to be on PS5. So that means a lot of things. A, you know, it'll have a console. Like, Guild Wars 2 has never had official controller support, so clearly from Guild Wars 3 it will have that. That's for everyone else, that might just be like the key thing, like, hell yeah, finally official controller support for a Guild Wars game outside of the mobile stuff they added to Reforged. But also, when Guild Wars 2 was first announced, they completely stopped development on Guild Wars 1. So there was no Guild Wars development for like 3 or 4 years. And then Guild Wars 1 was basically a maintenance mode for like 10 or 11 years until finally they made a new team with some external development help with the team at a studio called 2 Weeks with, you know, Guild Wars Reforged, and they're finally adding content back to that game. So kind of similar to what we see with like Final Fantasy 11 team still continuously updating that game. So for Guild Wars 3 and a follow-up video that was just published today, Arena announced basically that all three games are going to be supported to some extent, which is, I think, the most welcome news for any fans of Guild Wars is that, A, if you're a fan of 2 and you don't think 3 looks your alley, like 2 is going to keep being supported. If you're an old head and you like Guild Wars 1, it's been dormant for many years, but it's like the updates are still pretty minor. They're adding like a hero here or a dungeon there, but it's got a development team. It's got a studio head now, or a game director, I guess. There's a game director for Guild Wars 1, a game director for Guild Wars 2, and then presumably a game director for Guild Wars 3. So I think that's very ambitious. I don't know if ArenaNet can pull it off, but I do think it's definitely course correcting from what happened between 1 and 2. So not to go too in the weeds for those that don't care, but it is a prequel, which I think is smart because it means that there's a reason to play both games. You might still think, well, I don't like the Guild Wars 3 as a prequel, and that's fine. I'm still kind of not sold on it completely myself, but it is an interesting time in the lore. The whole title Guild Wars, even by the time of the first game, is referring to a past event. The Guild Wars had already happened by then. So a game that's set as a prequel could actually finally make, you know, the name actually relevant to the plot. They say that it can be played both single player and multiplayer. I forget where I saw it because there's like the trailer description, there's the press release, and then there's the studio update, and then there's a blog post, but they said that it will be friendly to solo play. They're going to have a combat system that is based on movement, momentum, and emphasized on both controller and keyboard. I guess, do you two have any questions, since I'm speaking to this as like someone who's been with this series for a long time?
I played Guild Wars 2 for a little bit, but I didn't really get really far in. I actually played it during the launch of the game, right? Mm-hmm. And I like it. I mostly like exploring to collect those, what do you call those landmarks thing? Do they have a term for it? But
There's vistas and there's points of interest.
Yeah, I was mostly just doing that, and I'd like the combat of it, and I do like how like all the characters like kind of like talk. For the MC, I don't really like...
There's a lot of voice acting, yeah.
Yeah, like a lot of games, I don't really like self-insert MCs, because I don't see myself as them, or I want to pretend to be them, so I really dislike having self-inserts in video games, technically for me, personally. It's like, I want to be the cool badass that you wrote, not me pretending to be the badass. At least that's how I treat most games, right? But, yeah, I did play it back in launch, but obviously, I didn't stick with it, because during the time it came out, I was very heavily focused on Aeon, which they more also on that later, have. Yeah. But, yeah, so at least that's my take.
And speaking as an old head on this, like I think Guild Wars 2's major downfall, the reason why it wasn't bigger, the reason why people fell off, was that they never had consistent direction. They launched it and then they said, we're going to do live updates. We're not going to do expansions. Then they announced, okay, actually, you know, that didn't work. We're going to do expansions. Then they paused and they said, okay, we're not going to do expansions anymore because we're going to launch a new game. And then they said, never mind, we're having layoffs. And they laid off like a third of the studio. We're going to go back to expansions. And now, like, and they never really just had that consistency, where Final Fantasy 14 was like, you know exactly what's going to come in the 0.1 patch, the 0.2 patch. The cadence was set. You knew what to expect. Where here was just kind of like there would be times of, are they even updating that game? Is that game still alive? Yes, it is. But you only knew if you were like playing it. And if you weren't playing it, if you were like, I didn't even know that game was still getting supported, I would not be surprised and I would not blame you. So obviously what we saw in the initial trailer was all, you know, they said in-engine alpha footage. A lot of people have compared it unfavorably to like, oh, it looks like default Unreal or it looks like Highguard. And I agree, the art style, if you compare Guild Wars 1 to Guild Wars 3, looks far more cartoony. I hope they kind of reel it in a little bit, but I'm withholding judgment until we see like more footage from like, obviously. I think placing the beta in fall 2027 basically means a year and a half, gives them time to kind of roll into, you know, what are the playable races? What are the playable classes? How will combat work? You know, is it going to bring back skill collecting from Guild Wars 1? Is it going to bring back traversal from Guild Wars 2? Is it going to have something that's completely different from either game? We just don't know really any of that right now. And maybe the actual in-game footage will look different from the in-engine footage, or maybe it won't. Who knows? So there's not a lot that you can really get from other than speculation at this point. Though they have said, I think next Tuesday, they're going to have a live stream, the studio director. So maybe we'll see more then on Tuesday, the 9th, I think. So we'll see. But I'm excited. I think it's cool that even if Guild Wars is not your jam, just to see some life in the MMO space, because it's been kind of dire for a while. Obviously, if you're a big fan of WoW or Final Fantasy 14 or Elder Scrolls, you're happy with where you're at. But in terms of new blood in the space, from a Western studio, it's been limited. There's not been a lot. So it's just cool to see that there is still someone breathing in this space. And I also think that ArenaNet, when Guild Wars 2 launched, they tried to like take on the big dogs, and I think they failed. They were like, play this instead of WoW. And like, Guild Wars 3 at its best sold like 3 million within its first month, I think, where the worst Guild Wars 2. And then I think the worst selling WoW expansion sold like 2.5 million in a week. Like, they're just on different orders of magnitude. And I think ArenaNet finally realizes that, like, hey, we're not gonna compete with WoW, we're not gonna compete with Final Fantasy, but we can kind of compete in that next tier with a package that is still more traditional MMO and less, you know, Genshin like, live service like, or Monster Hunter like. But you know, and then obviously one thing that Guild Wars has never had is they've never had a subscription or even like an optional premium content subscription. So I wonder if this is going to be same like buy to play supported with microtransactions. I presume that that's going to be the case, but we just don't know right now. But more to come, and I'm really excited. So unfortunately, even if you're not a fan, you're going to hear about it from me. So I think this is really cool. Also, I think that probably logo is really neat.
And from me, because yeah, I'm going to be playing Guild Wars Reforged on my phone soon. I think it's launching end of this month. Yeah. So
unless you live in Canada, then you can get on early. In kind of a similar vein, a game that appeared at both the State of Play and the Summer Game Fest is RuneScape Dragon Wilds. Now, this is a new open world like survival crafting game in the RuneScape universe, just like how Guild Wars 3 is the first time that Guild Wars is going to be on a console. RuneScape Dragon Wilds is also coming to PS5 and PC, and it's the first time a RuneScape franchise will be on a console. So it's currently available for early access, but will launch on September 15th. Oh, also for Xbox. I don't know. You have Xbox in the title, but yeah, not in the platform.
I was just going to bring that up because they showed it off weirdly. So during the State of Play, they showed, like, they had the first reveal and said that, oh, it's going to launch on PS5 as well. They didn't give the date or anything. And they said this is going to be the first time the RuneScape series is on console at all. And I was like, okay. And they said it's going to be in PlayStation Plus. Then at Summer Game Fest, the same game got confirmed with its date, and they also said it's coming to Xbox. It's just a weird way to show it off. Like,
Nintendo Switch, like, where they say coming to Switch, and then later they say and every other platform.
I get that, but like, that happens as soon as the event is over, right? This was like 2 days later at another event. It reminds me of when Persona 5 Royal and Persona 4 and 3 got announced at Xbox, and they weren't allowed to show the other platforms for like 2 days later or something like that. So this kind of gave me that vibe. It's just like, why would you not just announce everything there? Or at least after the event, like, what are you hiding for 1 day, literally? So that's why one news story has just PlayStation and PC, and the other one has Xbox. That's how they revealed it.
Mm-hmm. And I did play RuneScape, like, not the original, but like version 2 or whatever, mid-2004 era, which I think is what OSRS, which is surprisingly big, old school RuneScape. So I'm not really interested in Dragon Wilds, but I think it is cool just to see a studio like Jagex, who is basically just only known for the one or two things, then being able to branch out and still have, you know, RuneScape fans in mind, but offer a different experience for those that either haven't played RuneScape ever or in a long, long time, have a different experience for it. You know, and survival crafting games, I'm not surprised. Like, that sort of stuff has been gangbusters on PC. That's been really, really popular. So I'm not surprised to see that. So I think it looks really neat. I doubt I'll play it myself, but I'd be cool to see if someone on the podcast does end up putting some time into Dragon Wilds, because I'd be curious to hear their thoughts. Two smaller announcements here, but they were also this week, so we'll talk about them, and then we'll kind of go into trailers and updates. a new Ragnarok project, speaking of the MMO space, has been announced, but this is a single-player game. So Ragnarok is not an MMO that I'm familiar with, but, or it's multiple MMORPGs with like Ragnarok Online 3 still being worked on. But the Ragnarok console project is being announced for Xbox, PC, and PlayStation. Sorry, every console. PlayStation 5, Switch 2, Xbox, and PC. So it's slated for the first half of 2027. We got some initial screenshots for this. So Ragnarok is not a series that I know much about, but in a similar vein, also kind of... You did?
Yeah, it was the first MMO that was ever released. It was an extremely grindy game.
It was the first MMO. Is it? Is it given that credit?
The first, no, but it was like one of the first MMOs that people got access to. And it was extremely grindy. You would literally play for 60 hours just to get like 5% of your EXP bar when you reach like level 80 or something like that. It's so grindy. And then, you know, if you die, you also lose experience, which is extremely punishing. And you probably lose more than you gain.
It feels like that was more common back in the late 90s or whenever this game. I don't remember when Ragnarok Online released. Let me look.
Yeah, it's like I played it when it first launched. And it was like. Well, I think it's even earlier than that.
We talked about that, like Korean, like I'm sure not just Korean, but attributed often to Korean online games, where like you have a percent chance to upgrade a weapon, and if you fail, you lose the weapon, or if you die, you lose EXP.
Oh, it has all that.
Yeah, so not surprised.
But yeah, the game is very punishing for its time, but there wasn't anything like it. I think when it first came out, it has like a 3D background and your characters are 2D sprites, which is kind of like a novelty at the time. And they look really good for what it captures, right? Yeah, definitely have a lot of experience with the OG game. I think one of the crazy things when the game first came out is it was all free to play during beta. And then when they switched to beta, you had to subscribe like on a monthly basis. And, you know, that was kind of new to like people playing it during that time. And a lot of people that play are like teenagers, right? So they're like, this is a sub, credit card, what am I going to do, right? And one of the funniest things that they do with the game back when they first launched is that, you know, when you create an avatar, right? Like either like a girl or a male avatar, the game doesn't let you choose what you do, right? So some people like don't have their own credit card, so they borrow their mom's credit card, so their avatar is like a female in the game. And some people expect like when they meet like a female character in the game, they actually think it's a girl playing it because you're locked behind what the credit card pays, right? And some people just like stole their mom's credit card to play, you know, or some stuff like that.
I think in that era, at least people of our age, we all asked our dad or our mom for our $5 a month to play RuneScape and get out of the wilderness or whatever, like, or play Ragnarok or play WoW. So, yeah.
Yeah, a lot of weird things.
But yeah, new console project early next year. So if for any big fans of Ragnarok, there'll be a single player option. Or I don't know about single player, but console option.
That's not like their first single player option. They've done one for the DS as well.
Ah, okay.
There's a DS game which uses the graphics from the MMO, and then there was like a sequel that no one liked, which is like this 3D type sequel that they have. I think Samsung kind of co-funded, but I don't know. It's been a long time.
And then finally, they did announce that Omega Force is still going to be working on a new Attack on Titan games. So Attack on Titan 3. I'm actually surprised. I forgot there was a 2. Attack on Titan 3 was announced for Xbox, Switch 2, PS5, and PC. Still interestingly called AOT in like European markets, because I guess they can't use the full name for some legal reason.
When Atlus released the 3DS game, which I'm kind of annoyed with, because like if you've played any of these games, Koei Tecmo's games do not have the Sawano music. At least I think he did all. I haven't watched the final season yet. But it did not use the anime music. It used its own original, like they got music composed for that. But the Spike Chunsoft developed game, which Atlus released on 3DS, had the Sawano music, and the game was shit. So that annoyed me that the licensed music was stuck. But yeah, that game was called Attack on Titan in North America. But in Europe, they called it Shingeki no Kyojin. Like they just wrote that in English. I guess Koei Tecmo didn't want to do that, so they put it as AOT. But yeah, that I guess someone owns the license for releasing media with the name Attack on Titan in Europe, and the people who work on games do not want to license or aren't able to license or work out a deal. But yeah, that thing is still going on. And I forgot Attack on Titan 2 was so long ago. I thought, I said, didn't we just play this like a few years ago? It's been a lot longer than that.
Mm-hmm. All right, some trailers and updates. And by some, I mean a lot. So we'll go through these. And some smaller news, like Granblue Fantasy Relink, Endless Ragnarok, of course, is a game we're barreling towards in July. Another character trailer for, tell me, Chow, Fedeal?
Yep, Fedeal. Fedeal is one of the more popular characters in Granblue. She's actually like started as a very hated character because she started as a boss, which you only fight her in that dragon form that you see, that you sort of see in the trailer, but you don't fully see. And that boss is a very annoying boss in Granblue when it first came out because she basically uses like this zombie field where your characters turn to zombie and you can't heal anymore and you'll just slowly chip away and die. And there wasn't like a counter to it. Like, you basically had to kill her before that, right? But then when she has a human form that was revealed later when she joins in the sword, everyone just loves this character all of a sudden. So that's kind of like how it happened. But yeah, she's a very beloved character in Granblue. But her character story is pretty goon, I would say. It's basically what happens is that, you know, she's kind of like has the powers of death, right? And she doesn't know how life is created. So she's like constantly like asking like random characters, can you do this mating thing? I want to see it because I want to see how life forms are created. And everyone's just like kind of creeped out by her response and they all like leave. And they're like, and she'd be like, why is everyone leaving?
Yeah, that's... I was going to say, like, oh, Chow is describing something as goon. This can't be good. I'm like, yep, that seems accurate. Yeah, but, you know, people can like what they like. No judgment here.
But, yeah, she's here. She's... I'm pretty hyped for the trailer, but I don't think it's actually as a good showcase compared to the Frawl trailer. I think the Frawl trailer is just like a whole new level just because of the whole, you know, the... with, like, the devil... being summoned in combat, so it's just like it feels like Bayonetta-ish. I don't see like Fidel having that kind of same type kind of thing. So, but who knows? Maybe they might reveal more characters. I think they won't want to reveal everything yet.
A couple other small trailers. This one I don't know if there'll be a ton to talk about, but this is the I think is it NexCon or NexMarvel? I always get those mixed up. NetEase, the other one. A NetEase game, Sea of Remnants. This was first shown in mid-2025 as an open, free-to-play ocean adventure coming out for both like PC consoles and mobiles. There was a new trailer, but the trailer is primarily like a CG music video with tiny snippets of gameplay, but not a ton. So it doesn't really tell you a whole bunch more like about what this game is. I do think that the art style is pretty unique. I do think that the character design is like kind of really, I don't know, like you wouldn't confuse this with another game. It looks almost like Tim Burton-esque. I think it's really cool, but the trailer was also, there's a good trailer in terms of like, it's got a good sound and good visuals, but it doesn't tell you a whole lot about the game. So in terms of being able to discuss it on a podcast, it's like, yeah, new trailer for Sea of Remnants, but didn't really show a whole lot. But yeah. This one was not at Summer Game Fest or State of Play. This one is at the Day of the Devs. This is Threads of Time. This is the one that Adam bagged on for being almost too referential to Chrono Trigger. It's very much the, do you remember Chrono Trigger? Remember Barry's Chrono Trigger? That said, I think the game does look neat. During Day of the Devs, Balor Games and Rio Games did show like not only new footage, but had a couple of the development team speaking to their design intent that they have people working on it that used to work on Deltarune or other things. Like they're really proud of their team. So still no like release windows or anything, but just a new look at Threads of Time, one of those like JRPG homages that sometimes end up kind of duds, but sometimes end up pretty great. So we'll keep eyes on that. And then here's one that I'm sure James would love to speak to, but the Steins Gate reboot, we've talked about it fairly frequently, slated to come out this year. Talking about all, we've already talked about the new art and things like that, but this week we got a trailer for a new world. I'm not a Steins Gate person, so apologies if I speak like I don't know what I'm talking about, because it's true, but there's basically a new world line, like a new story thread calling the Gamma world line, where they say in this world the time machine was never completed. So that's new to the reboot.
Yeah, so it's just
like I've been questioning why this project even exists, but I love Steins Gate, but so I was going to play it anyway. I am happy to see this, although I didn't watch the whole trailer or whatever because I kind of want to go in as blind as possible when I play it. But new content is good. I just hope it fits with the thing when it actually shows up, because Steins Gate is one of the few visual novels or adventure games where I actually got the platinum trophy multiple times, because I had to play it on like a European account first and then I got it over here. So it's one of those where I'm a completionist, so I want to see what happens and how it is in context when I play it. I'm very excited for this release. It's a bit annoying how they're handling it. I don't know if you've seen that it's coming out sooner in Asia and worldwide on Steam and Xbox, but the console, like PlayStation and Switch versions, are coming out later in the West. So they are coming out with English in Asia. Okay, sorry, I missed that. But yeah, like it's a little annoying, but I guess I have to do two articles for it. But yeah, like I am definitely going to be playing this as soon as I can. Like, I'm tempted to email them right now and say, can you send me an early code? But yeah, like that, like salivating to play that. So hopefully it ends up being good. I did not care too much for Steins Gate Zero. I liked it a lot, but it felt like a downgrade from the original. So I hope whatever new stuff they do over here still feels as good as the main core Steins Gate.
A couple other trailers and updates for games that were either at State of Play or Summer Game Fest. This one was at both. Control Resonant. So a series I've always been interested in, but I haven't played. It showed up at the State of Play, where it had a new story trailer, which basically introduced two things. One, it gave us the release date of September 24th. And two, it really prominently featured Jesse. Of course, Control Resonant has a new protagonist named Dylan, but very much shows that, you know, Jesse is still going to be a major character in this game. And then the second thing is that it showed up at the the Summer Game Fest with they called it the Paranatural Manhattan trailer. It's a really cool trailer, basically because of a new original song. Like, it's got a banging backing soundtrack for it. It is called, I'm gonna pronounce this as best I can, Manalan Maya by Vilma Ja. So it just went to Spotify like after the trailer went up, and it's a, like, I don't know anything about Control, but I've watched this trailer twice just because of the backing soundtrack. So really cool. It looks like an awesome game for Control fans. I think people are really excited for this. Because we got a release date, we got some awesome trailers. We know that, you know, favorite characters are making a return, at least in some fashion. It looks really cool.
I am definitely excited for this. I'm not sure on... Well, I was going to say I don't know where I want to play it, but I don't know if you saw, but there is like PlayStation exclusive 48-hour early access for the deluxe edition. So that kind of made the decision for me, because I don't want to get spoiled. So, yeah, unfortunate, but yeah. If you do want to play it, it's 2 days early on just PS5. Although this one isn't EGS exclusive like the last one, so that's nice at least. EGS exclusive, most people just ignore. I know I do. So yeah, it's on Steam. That's good.
We got another trailer for Star Wars Zero Company and release date. It's going to be releasing on August 27th. So this one is basically the Venn diagram of if you're a fan of Star Wars and if you're a fan of XCOM. So a bunch of X4Axis devs are now at Bitreactor. They're developing Star Wars Zero Company. We got some story and some gameplay. And I've only played XCOM, the reboot from like the early 2010s. But this, it looks... like, if you're a fan of Star Wars and you're a fan of XCOM, this is a perfect, you know, that's what this game is. So, looks really cool. I'm kind of a lapsed Star Wars fan, but I have a brother who is not much of a tactical game person, but just loves Star Wars. So, I'm curious to see what he'll think of this. He's really looking forward to, what does FOTOR stand for? I forget. The new Knights of the Old Republic game under a different name that was shown off. Fate of the Old Republic.
Yes.
Yeah, that's what it was. I've always called it FOTOR. I forgot what the acronym was. But yeah, new trailer for Zero Company coming out in a little over 2 months. Here's another game I'm really excited about, also with a September release date. This is The Blood of Dawnwalker from Rebel Wolves and Bandai. It's launching on September 3rd. We already knew that. But we got a new trailer for it. And the trailer I thought was okay, but it really leans into the vampires are cool, right? It's not, you know, it's a Dawnwalker, not a vampire, but same thing. And I'm kind of like, it feels a little bit overplayed, but sure. So I didn't think the trailer was the greatest, but I am excited for this game due to the gameplay delves that they've done for it. And then we kind of knew when Bandai first announced this that it was supposed to be like a multi-entry project, like a trilogy. And I forget if they said it's going to have like other media crossovers. But they also uploaded a trailer called A Glimpse into the Future. And basically it just shows the protagonist, whose name I'm forgetting. It's like Cohen, in a much more contemporary modern setting versus like the, you know, the medieval fantasy setting of the main game, showcasing like, oh, you know, vampires live a long time and maybe there'll be entries that take place in different area, you know, many centuries past the original game. So kind of just a teaser saying like, hey, the Dawnwalker saga is being planned and this is just the first entry. So I don't know how much people care about that, but showing that this isn't intending to be a one-off original IP, it's going to be built into something bigger, which I think is cool. It's ambitious at the very least. Here, this one I guess I could have put in with RuneScape and Guild Wars, but we got a trailer for the global release of Ion 2 coming in September. Ion 2 released in Korea and Taiwan last November. It is not released in Japan, Europe, or North America. And we got the reveal trailer for it, and Adam was joking in our Discord chat, like, you know, ciao, pay attention. And you mentioned, yep, you already recognize the music. So are you excited for Ion 2 global launch?
I don't know. Like, I remember playing the original a lot, and the original was like, you basically had to give up your life if you want to stay up to date with the game. Because the dailies would take hours to grind, and then if you just miss it for one day, other players will be ahead of you, and then you'll fall behind. And I don't know if that would be here, but I'm sure they probably will tone down the grind in it. But I did want to play it from the Taiwan launch, because there is English ways of playing in English by going through the Taiwanese server and stuff. But the thing is that you need like some kind of Taiwanese ID to create your account, and I didn't have that, and I just kind of stuck in the account creation process. I'll check out the game when it officially releases, because I love Aeon. I think it's the best MMO for a bit, until they screw it up with too much game on balance and too much pay to win as the game went on. So at least that's
what I say. The trailer looks really pretty, but it's a lot of like, here's a third person view of a character running forward. It's a lot of that. Like, okay, that's interesting. And like people jumping really high and some combat. It looks very flashy and like high production values.
Like the original game, they highly sold on the aerial combat, but aerial combat is awful in Ion. Aerial combat is that you basically fly and within like a minute you run out of flight time and you fall. And then if you land on the ground from a certain height, you'll just die. So a lot of people just don't really engage in flight combat. And if you're a melee class, you're basically screwed, because the range units will just keep kiting you, and then you can't do anything about it. So it was like a very off balance. So within like the second, like within the first expansion, they already made like this one zone that you go into, and there's like no flight involved. So it just tells you that the flight combat never kind of worked. So I don't know how they would do it in the second game, but I think in the second game, I think the air combat's probably going to be a lot better, I think, at least assuming how it looks. So I know there's already impressions out there, but, you know, I didn't really get to check it out, so.
All right, you're due up on this one in September. The heading says September. Do we know what date, or is it just September? Nope, it just says this September through Steam and Purple.
And people ask on Twitter, what the hell is Purple? Purple is NCSoft's own software launcher. So if you're curious on what the hell Purple is.
The next update we have is Demon School is coming to Switch 2. So Demon School finally released late November. We talked about how it had a pretty major update. When was that? Not just late May, so mid-May. So that was a cool one that added a new game plus, character lines, et cetera, text log. But it's going to be getting... You just covered this one just now, Mikhail, so this is probably fresh in your head.
Yeah.
It's getting like DLC and it's coming to Switch too.
Yeah. Yeah, so the DLC is like puzzle-focused. They said there's going to be a side story with a mysterious antagonist. In the teaser trailer, which they didn't upload on their own channel, at least I'll check after we finish recording if it's there, but they blurred out the dialogue with this antagonist because they want to reveal it later or they want it to be a surprise. And yeah, the Switch, they said they're doing a native Switch 2 version, free upgrade, like with mouse controls. That'll be really useful for this game. And yeah, that was good to see because they just like last night they said that there's going to be some Demon School news at whatever showcase it was. I forgot which showcase it was, even though I just wrote this. But yeah, so it was a Switch 2 version and DLC coming. Very happy to see that. A game was very nice. So yeah, excited for this.
Yeah. There's still going to be more news coming in as different streaming events happen throughout the week. But I think and Demon School, of course, you said was just, an hour ago. But I think we covered all the major RPG-related news that was shown at Summer Game Fest or at the State of Play. Like, there were things we didn't cover, like Alien Isolation 2. There was that first single-player, like, third-person military game. What was that, like, Crossfire?
Crossfire.
Yeah, they spent a lot of time on that one.
It's like a game from Naughty Dog and some other big name devs or whatever. And
yeah, they definitely shouted, like, a narrative game because it's got the talent of Naughty Dog. So Pal World was on there. I guess we could cover that, but I don't think anyone was interested in covering that. Hot Wheels Infinite Rush was there.
Yeah, I wasn't sure about Pal World because and based on how many games were there, like I instead of saying
it was low
should
on
we
the
cover
list.
This
yeah.
should we not
yeah.
yeah yeah it's low.
So other things that were announced over the week, Scarlet Nexus has finally hit the 2 million copies sold mark, so a game that was, I don't know about near and dear to our heart, but a game that we thought was interesting and inventive and kind of rooting for, primarily because of the talent behind it. What was it? Who was the guy who Kenji? Oh, I'm gonna mess this up.
I forgot his name, but I know what you're talking about. Like, he was promoting it like on his own social account and every day.
Kenji Anabuki. Basically has tweeted 2,000 days in a row sharing Scarlet Nexus news since the release, so a real one. And just his enthusiasm's infectious. So I think Scarlet Nexus didn't set the world on fire, but I think if they ever did make a sequel happen, I think we'd be excited to see it. Just be like, hell yeah.
I really enjoyed it. Like, it delivered what I wanted from Astral Chain. Like, I was so hyped for Astral Chain, like, new Platinum Games IP and all, and I bought that. Like, it actually cost me more than, like, most Switch games back then because it was, like, an import store. Didn't want to bring it, and I had to get them to get it for me. And at this point, I was, like, super anti-digital, so I wanted a physical copy, and I was just so bored playing it. So, like, when I got Scarlet Nexus, it kind of had, like, a similar concept and adored it. So, yeah. And I think this is another lesson in one of those things where you have publishers reporting numbers or players versus sales, because Scarlet Nexus hit 2 million players, like, 4 years ago, and now it's hit 2 million sales, so sometimes there's a big discrepancy in that front. That's the lesson here.
Let's see here. Citizen Sleeper and Citizen Sleeper 2 Starward Vector are coming to Switch 2 on June 25th. Two games that I played back-to-back either late last year or early this year. Real fun titles. Cool to see the perfect fit on Switch 2. I played them on the Steam Deck and I had an excellent time. Pokemon Champions is going to be getting its mobile release on June 17th. Of course, it released on Switch in early April. This one just got announced just like 2 hours ago, right? Fields of Mystria. This is a Stardew Valley-like that originally released in 2024. Is going to be getting its 1.0 exiting early access launch on August 5th. My fiance is really like Field of Mystria. It feels like it's one of the games that most closely matches Stardew Valley while still offering something new. She really liked it, so this is cool. That's getting the only thing it doesn't have multiplayer. So I know people have been asking for multiplayer for a while.
It's one of those things where it's one of those games where I bought it when it hit early access, and it had so much content back then for like an early access release, but I do not play early access games out of principle unless I have to for work. So I was just like, I'll wait for 1.0. So like now it's finally releasing in like 2 months, and they are very excited for that because they're adding so much more to an already content packed game, and everyone I know who plays it loves it. Like, I think most people who got like hundreds of hours out of Stardew Valley and had their fill, they moved on to this and they've been playing that as well. So yeah, looking forward to seeing how it feels in 1.0.
Dune Awakening, which released on PC in June. No, wait, when? Yeah, June last year, sorry. Like, didn't release in June. So Dune Awakening is going to be coming to PS5 and Xbox on September 22nd alongside a major update to the PC version. This is interesting. The first thing they highlight on the major update is like including a single player mode. So it's like, oh, okay, what does that mean? And I haven't played the game to know like what that might mean. It's just interesting to frame that as an update. Like, we're adding single player. Like, oh, that seems like pretty major. So I'm curious to see like what that means. But for those that don't like to play multiplayer games or they don't want to bother with matchmaking or anything like that, like, okay, maybe if you just want to poke in Dune.
No, they actually had to also do this thing with PvP and PvE that at one of the updates or something, they, like I covered it a few weeks or like over a month ago, they put out this statement saying that they will be doing PvE focus, and they had like this PvP stuff, which they said was not matching what we wanted from the game and players were not responding to it as they had hoped for. So they're going to like focus on PvE. So the fact that they're doing single player also is like, it's good to see that. But I don't know the state of it right now. I tried it just like a month or two after it launched on PC. I have not played it since, so I don't know what the state is right now. It has gotten like a lot of paid and free DLC since coming to PC. So the PS5 and Xbox version will come with so much stuff right from the get-go. So I don't know if they confirmed cross-save and cross-play or anything, but you know, in games like this, those would be really useful.
It's interesting because I remember probably like 5 or 6 years ago at this point, but New World, the Amazon MMO that unceremoniously got, you know, shut down, was originally envisioned as like a PvP focus game, but then late in the release, they said, oh, we're going to add PvE because that's what the players want. And I always think like the audience for a PvE based on multiplayer game is going to be bigger, but it's interesting to see, like, I'd be interested to see a studio say like, no, we're committing to like a PvP world versus world or GVG or whatever you want to call it focus for an online game, even though the audience for that is not as big, rather than pivoting to PvE. So I guess that's kind of what Marathon's doing, right? I cannot speak to Marathon because I haven't played it, but maybe James can correct me on that when he's back next week, because I know he's put like a billion hours into that. Elden Ring is going to be coming to Nintendo Switch 2 on August 28th. Obviously, it was originally announced a while back, but finally has a release date for Elden Ring Tarnished Edition, August 28th, Switch 2.
And they're releasing the other quote-unquote tarnished stuff, which is like, I think it's just some cosmetics or something, for 550 yen in Japan the same day. They haven't confirmed the price for like the Americas and Europe, but I assume it's going to be $5. And they didn't actually show any gameplay when they announced this Elden Ring date. They just announced it with saying, here's Elden Ring coming out over here. I don't know if we're going to see it in a potential Nintendo Direct or maybe just closer to launch, but for a game which was revealed with the console and delayed twice, I believe, and had like bad showings until a recent preview event had it good, like James wrote about it. It's not filling me with confidence to announce a date, have it pre-order, like have it available for $80 and not show footage at all. That's kind of bad.
Onimusha Way of the Sword got a release date of September 25th. And yeah, people are already joking that September is packed. October is getting packed because people are avoiding Grand Theft Auto. So another September release for Onimusha Way of the Sword. Chow, you're pretty excited for this one, right?
Yeah, I think you had a chance to check out the demo, but
yeah, there's a demo available like, now.
Was like playing it. He's like, damn, you have to check this out immediately. It's better than Pragmata. It's like, okay, I'll give it a shot.
It is really good. It is really good, but it's not as like fast as the old Onimusha, which I kind of expected. Like, I think the first reveal, everyone just thought it was going to be a Souls-like or whatever, but it is Onimusha, but I kind of hope the final game has more aggression from the enemies and that there's an option to play it a bit faster, because it feels a bit just sluggish. Not in input latency or anything. It just feels like slower pace than I expected from an Onimusha game. But like on its own, I really like it. So I want to play more of the demo. So
speaking of September and October release dates, Phantom Blade Zero was originally announced to be releasing on September 9th. They announced that very late last year. They've pushed their they've released a new special teaser trailer, as well as saying that they're pushing the release date from September 9th to October 29th. So a little under a 2-month delay, but still going to be in that very packed September to October time frame, just at the back of it rather than at the front of it. No Rest for the Wicked is another game. This is from Moon Studios that released in early access in 2024, also getting its version 1.0 release later this year, coming in October. Let's see, October for PS5 and PC, and then also planned for Xbox and Switch 2, but no release date specific for those. So a game I've heard good things about for early access, and curious to see how the full release lines up. And then another, this was shown at the State of Play. I'm not sure why I pushed it back at the very end, but if you're following the timestamps, here we are at the very end. RGG Studios' Stranger Than Heaven, of course, had a pretty big showing at the showcase with Snoop Dogg making an appearance on stage. It's going to be launching on January 15th, 2027. And we also got a new trailer focusing on some of the cast reveals, including Tupac is in the game. For me, I'm like, I don't really care, but it made a big splash at the showing, so it seems like something people are excited about.
I think this was at Summer Game Fest, not State of Play.
Oh, I meant Summer Game Fest. I must have said State of Play, because I've been at this for two hours and my brain is, they both start with S. Yes, I meant Summer Game Fest. My apologies. Thanks for keeping me on the level.
Yeah, it they put up pre-orders for it. They put up a trailer. They confirmed Tupac. And you know, one thing I think everyone's missed, because everyone's obsessed with like, oh, Tupac is in it, and everyone has their opinion on that. It has Takaya Kuroda, who's Kiryu's voice actor, which they kind of just snuck in over there, and he's playing an original character. He posted about it on his Twitter account saying this is the first time he's going to voice non-Kiryu, or like a character not Kiryu, or not based on Kiryu in an RGG studio game. So that kind of went under the radar for a lot of people. And I've already pre-ordered the game. So yeah, we'll see how that goes. I'm very excited for it. They confirmed the January release. I saw some people assume that maybe Stranger Than Heaven will be January and Persona 4 Revival will be February, kind of like how they did Yakuza 8 and Persona 3 Reload back in 2024. And I wonder if that ends up happening now. But yeah, I'm going to like give this a go for sure, like regardless of everything they show that might deflate my hype in a way. But yeah, they need to release the song, man. Like, what is Sega doing?
Yeah. It's interesting because I've really caught up with RGG Studio. Like, I've played every Yakuza game at this point. I've played the Judgment games. But I'm struggling to get excitement for this, and I'm not sure why. But I'm sure I will play it eventually. But for whatever reason, it's just not catching me. But I'll try to keep an open mind and definitely give it a try out when it releases early in January. So I'm surprised that we got through all the major headlines in just 2 hours, probably just because we have fewer voices in the room. You know, when you have five or six people each giving their feedback on different announcements, things like that, things tend to go longer. But I think for all the news that we had to cover today, that was a pretty efficient covering of that. Was there anything that I missed or anything at the show that maybe wasn't RPG related or was, you know, kind of fell through the gaps that you guys, you know, as takeaways as we kind of wrap up this podcast?
I think we covered everything important. Like, I obviously not an RPG, but Virtua Fighter looks really nice. I'm excited for that.
Look, it's
but then no year.
You might do that branching paths again, just like how Josh did for Street Fighter.
Yeah, but then no year, no platform, so I think it might be further away than we expect. Otherwise, yeah, Ace Combat 8 is definitely like my most anticipated game, mainly because I want the remaster of Ace Combat 0. Like, this is your, like, they got me. They're going to make me pre-order it because I don't want to miss out on that. And I might play Ace Combat 8 later, but I'm definitely playing Ace Combat 0 the moment I can. Otherwise, I think we sorted everything. Like, you kept us in check.
Well, obviously, and, like, yeah, we'll get to see Josh, Adam, and James's opinions on things like Final Fantasy VII Revelation and others when they're back from SGF. So even if, you know, there's no more news to come out for specific games, I'm sure we'll be touching base on those games next week once they're back and we're able to see what their opinions are on those, plus everything else that comes out of Xbox and everything, all the things we already mentioned. So all the news about Final Fantasy VII Revelation, the trailer, some of the features, including Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, coming to Switch 2 and having the stream progression, are all up on the site, rpgsite.net. No Gothic 1 review yet because the code is very late, but we do have at least a technical preview for PC handhelds. I know it's just a little tease, but on the site as well. And I'll return to giving fuller impressions of that once I'm able to put more time into the game. Of course, also the interview with, make sure I get his name right, Hitoshi Sakamoto from late May up on the site. So a real cool opportunity there to speak to someone who's been in the game a long time. Join our Discord, discord.gg/RPGsite. Lots of people that were basically kind of live watching, live reacting to the state of play. So that was, Summer Game Fest, probably both of them. So that was really cool. So join the community there. If you like this podcast on whatever service of choice, leave us a like, leave us a rating. We'd love to see those. Give us likes and views on our YouTube panel. Follow us on any of the social medias. Just search for RPG Space Site. You should be able to see that. I'm gonna try to see if we can get Alex in here to talk about Final Fantasy in the coming weeks. He's a slippery one to get to latch down, so I have no promises on that. But you'll hear from us and hopefully the full crew just a week from now with final, you know, SGF thoughts on the next episode of the TetraCast. But until you hear from us next time, stay safe, take care, and we'll talk to y'all later.